Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling.
It's another beautiful spring day in Chicago. How today in Chicago, 60 degrees. Is that right? 60? That's got to be a mistake.
Who told you that?
What's the high today?
I don't have it in front of me. Right, hold on.
I looked at AccuWeather an hour ago. It was 60 degrees.
Steve, this is the...
68.
In Chicago?
High of 68 today.
In Chicago?
Yes. It's not Seattle, even though it feels like it.
Well, no, you could have said it was like Aurora.
Oh.
It could be a 10 or 15 degree difference. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well, McGill just says a high of 68. 60 Lakeside.
How about McGill drinks at work? 60 Lakeside, 68. But point being, I don't know, isn't the normal temperature this time of year about 80, 90, 100?
That's 100, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Don't worry, I have a feeling we're going to hit that.
You know, 4th of July is just a couple, not even 2 weeks away, right?
Isn't that crazy?
I know.
Really crazy.
I had to wear a coat out to walk my dog last night.
It was chilly last night.
I wore shorts to work again. That was a bad idea.
The good news is by Sunday...
And I don't mean because of my legs, Steve.
Well,
nice calves.
Yeah, right. Saturday, 81. Wow. Sunday, 85. So we're getting back up there. Normal high this year, time of year, is 81.
Does this have anything to do with Greenland melting?
Yes.
You're kind of fixed on Greenland this morning, aren't you?
Yes.
Well, I don't like seeing things just...
He just heard that it was melting.
I mean, we got dogs plowing through water when there's supposed to be snow. This is...
Mm-hmm.
I find it concerning.
Yeah, well, you should. Yeah, especially if you're in Greenland. So we're 20 degrees short of the normal. But, you know, listen, you can't do anything about it. You just got... I think you're in Chicago. I mean, if you were somewhere else and it was this kind of weather, you'd be miserable.
You could complain.
Here, you can be happy while you're miserable.
Can't you complain vociferously, Steve?
You could have joined those protesters that were out yesterday. Did you see them?
The weather protesters?
On Columbus, they were protesting something about climate control. I don't know.
When climate change.
Yes.
I thought you meant they were protesting the weather. That would actually be cool we got an organized protest together because the weather sucked.
Yeah, I think they were protesting the fact that we're going to allow coal-fired power plants to start belching smoke out into the atmosphere again.
Oh, okay. That's what it was. Yeah, I couldn't understand their chant. They were going on and on.
Well, it's a long complaint. Who are we? We don't want coal-fired plants to belt smoking. You know, I mean, it doesn't really rhyme.
Yeah, it didn't quite, yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to go over there because then I felt like I would have to join in and, you know, would never get home.
What I normally say at this hour, busy show. Busy show today. Father Tom Hurley is going to be on. We love Father Tom. He's one of the best guests on this show. So he'll come in here, and we'll laugh it up a little bit, and we'll talk about the world's largest block party. Carms, do you go to that?
I haven't been to that one, Steve, but maybe could this be the year? Can I get an invite? Do you need an invite?
Well, if the Father Tom's going to be here, you can get an invite from God.
Okay.
He knows the number at the home office.
All right.
You know, I know so many people that have gotten engaged and have met their future husband or wife at the block party.
Is that right?
Lots of people, I don't want to say hook up at the block party, but it is a great place to meet potential spouses.
Now, do they live on the block?
No, I think they just go and, you know, because it's kind of
a legendary Chicago party.
Yeah, yeah, you don't have to live on the block to go, right?
No, absolutely not.
No, anybody can go, yeah.
Pat Brady, Eric Edelstein later, Anna DeVellantis in studio, and or Anna DeVellantis if you prefer, since that's actually her name. And then Chuck Todd back on with us this morning, a little after 6:30. Why don't we start with this? It's the top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Well, last night was supposed to be the easy one for the White Sox. Super Joe was in attendance. Giolito on the mound didn't go that way. creepy Wilson Contreras grand slam in the first inning.
He's not creepy.
Some would argue it.
Gee.
It was...
Sorry, always a Cubs fan. Sorry.
I mean, first pitch of the game, home run, Leury Garcia.
Yeah, and you go, well, this is going to go well.
I missed that.
Super Joe, you're probably feeling good about yourself then, weren't you?
Yeah, I was trying to stay dry and happy for about a half an inning. Yep.
Right.
Yeah, wasn't it chilly?
I was not dressed properly, Mary.
Oh.
New
shorts?
No, I was wearing pants, just short sleeves and lots of rain.
A cold, wet, bitter, somewhat drunken crowd of almost 40,000 on hand at Wrigley. Contreras said the game marked the third anniversary of his first major league home run. Oh, whatever.
He homered in his first ever at bat. He homered the next year on this date, Steve, and then last night he hit two bombs.
No, so he's June 19th dangerous?
He's all about that June 19th.
Okay. Good thing he was in the lineup.
So I guess now they got to play an extra game. I know this is only a two-game series, but it's 1-1. Now you got to play a third.
Well, July 6th and 7th at Guaranteed Rate Field, the rematch.
What's with only four games this year?
I hate it. They did it a couple years ago. I don't know why. The one in Guaranteed Rate, the Friday before is an off day. Neither of them are playing on Friday.
Well, let's go.
Right. Just do it for fun.
Next. While you were sleeping, President Trump showed up on Sean Hannity's show to have Sean kiss his behind for a while, and then to say that nobody needs to worry about Iran. It's going to be just fine with Iran. A couple hours later, we find out that Iran shot down a $120 million drone. This isn't a $400 drone you order off Amazon. It's a $120 million piece of equipment shot down.
It wasn't fully loaded. It didn't have weapons on board, so it's
yeah. But all the cool stuff that lights up and beeps. I mean, there's your $120 million.
Iran, by the way, this morning says that the drone was not in international waters. It was in its airspace. So that's their response to it.
Yeah, and we say it was in international waters.
Yes.
The Strait of Hormuz, the area of the world that we're talking about here. No idea what the response is going to be from Trump and the White House and the Pentagon. As of yet, no comment. Is that accurate?
From
Trump and the White House and the Pentagon?
Not so far yet. The Pentagon says it was in international waters. That's right. The official comment from them, but not from Trump yet.
Next. The Illinois law enforcement officials from high to low and in between all say the same thing. There's no way to roadside test for marijuana impairment. Legalization starts, is it July 1st? Right? 2 weeks away? 10 days away?
I believe that's what we said yesterday.
Yes.
And if you get pulled over, other than like having the Cheech and Chong moment where you open the doors and smoke rolls out of your car, then they're not going to know.
Well, police can shine a light in your eyes, and if your eyes are big, then they can pull you aside for more testing. So that would be like a blood test or some other thing. So, you know, when the cops come to your door and they say, hey, roll down your window and let me see your ID and then they shine the flashlight in your eyes.
Hey, man, don't do that.
The pupils go, bonk. That's when they know.
But you can't do the one leg stand thing, right? Or the walking on the line. They don't make you do that.
No.
I think the best test is, again, the Pringles test, where you take Pringles from the can, you put them in a straight line, and you see if people can pick them up in a straight line, because you know they're going to try.
Yeah.
Or you eat the whole can.
Sure. Right.
Yeah, or you have snack-sized Snickers in your pocket, and you say, hey, you smell this?
Or anything from Hostess.
Yeah.
Just check for snacks in the car.
So, hey, man, you want a ding-dong? Is that one of the things, ding-dong? Is that a snack?
Yes, it is.
There was a gentleman on LaSalle the other day, LaSalle and Division, at a light, Steve. The windows were down, and it was significant. And I just took it like they were perhaps, you know.
Like being at a Grateful Dead concert.
You breathed it all in.
I mean, I was like, not the least bit shy here. All right.
Could have been for medicinal reasons. You never know.
That's possible, sure.
Next, James Holzhauser, the Jeopardy champ, who won 32 straight games before an odd final game loss and earned a total of almost $2.5 million, has donated a portion of his winnings to a Chicago-area pancreatic cancer walk. He did so in honor of Alex Trebek.
That seems like a good move, right?
Yeah, don't you think?
Yeah.
Trebek dealing with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And Zetiker, resident of Holzhauser's former town and fundraiser in the walk, told CNN that she was watching the show and aware of Holzhauser's connection to Naperville, decided she would reach out and invite him to the walk. On July 14th, Holzhauser told her, can't get there, but I'll send you a check. So, Holzhauser wrote the message for Alex Trebek and all the other survivors. Well, why did he donate $1,109.14? Do we know that?
That is an odd amount.
Right? $1,109.14.
It's an excellent question, Steve. Question.
Next! Old Town Ale House named 11th on the travel list of the 50 best dive bars in America. This is the Big Seven travel list. I don't know what that is. The Old Town Ale House was a favorite of Anthony Bourdain, featured the bar in two of his television programs. There's something about the Ale House, its willingness to accept all who stagger through its doors. It's a morbid sense of humor, its never ending flow of opinions. That's the review that was written about the same. This is all from Anthony Bourdain in a 2016 love letter to Chicago.
You ever been in there?
I've not.
They have some fine, fine artistry on the walls there. Very
in the bathroom?
Not just in the bathroom, Mary. Everywhere. A little risque, if you will.
What do you mean, nakedity?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, my.
Men and women?
Men and women.
Huh. Does Mr. Skin know about this?
I bet he does.
He knows about all of it. Let's go live to Michael now to tell us why it was $1,109.14.
So the reason for that amount of money was because it was the birthday of his daughter, Natasha.
11-9-14?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Awesome.
Still weird, but okay.
Loves his daughter.
Well, no, I get that. That's fine. It's just, you know. Next. Nike is trying to get some pats on the back here. Nike announced Tuesday it's going to introduce its first ever size-inclusive mannequin. Now, if you don't know what that means, mannequins are all cut to, supermodel plus type shape. You know, ridiculous, like Barbie bodies, that type of thing. This mannequin is described as a hefty male figure eating a 12-inch hoagie.
Now, come on.
The Nike quote is, "We want everyone to feel represented when shopping at a Nike store." What? So
it's a plus size.
That's not inclusive.
That's not inclusive. They're going, fat guys who eat hoagies right. are welcome here, and we're going to mock you because of it. You could put the fat guy mannequin out. You don't have to give the fat guy mannequin a hoagie. What is that?
I agree.
They ran out of mannequin material for the donut and the, sugary everything else?
Well, again, why do you need the why do you need the hoagie, right? Because you could see, that's a big mannequin. That mannequin looks like my brother. That mannequin looks like my uncle. Oh, isn't that great that they're even going to represent double X or whatever the size is?
Well, how weird do you want the
give them a sandwich? What right. the hell is that?
Not everyone is a runner, so they want everyone to be represented to wear Nikes.
And then the best part
should they have some of the super skinny mannequins with their finger down their throat, throw it up in the bathroom? I mean, come on.
The best part of this story is it's going to be regional. So if you go to Philadelphia, they'll be eating a roast beef hoagie, right? And then there's the chicken. The
cheesesteak. Yeah, cheesesteak in Philly. Right.
Pizza here.
Right.
Yeah.
Come on. Stupid. Kiss our butts, our collective butts, Nike. Yeah, and by the way, that joke's not complete as well. The mannequin will wear a mustard-stained Nike shirt matted with pieces of shredded lettuce and provolone, as well as a fitness tracker on his wrist, indicating it'll walk 17 steps to the fridge to get a jar of mayonnaise. This has got to be a bit, right?
It feels like it hurts. It hurts.
It's got to be a bit. You think they're really doing it?
I think they're doing it, Steve. I mean, I don't know about the whole... That part seems a little over the top. But love your body, no matter what shape it's in.
And know that we at Nike are making fun of you.
Right. Just carry some big size stuff. I mean, more than just extra large. Have a double X every once in a while.
I got to say, the mannequin with the tennis outfit on, that's a good mannequin.
Here's the deal. I never walk into a store, whether it was a lot of pounds ago or now, I never walk into a store and go, oh, my feelings are so hurt. They don't have a mannequin that looks like me. I walk in and go, do they have my size or don't they? And I leave. But if I walk into a store and see a larger mannequin and the mannequin's covered in mustard eating a hoagie, I'm going to go, what the hell is that?
Do you think they're trying to motivate you, Steve?
They're trying to anger me.
They're trying to
clearly done.
Yeah, this story is from hungry at the same Onion. So
it's got to be, right?
Yep, it's from The Onion.
All
we've
right.
been had.
All right,
I'm going to look at that hoagie and I'm going to be like, I want a hoagie now.
All right, it's from The Onion. I feel better. Like I said, Nike, great people. They would never insult anybody.
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
All right, Chuck Todd coming up here in a couple of minutes. Also have passes to the 12th Annual Blackhawks Convention, July 26th through the 28th at the Hilton Chicago. Convention features all the normal stuff. Blackhawks.com to get your passes today. Oh, later. Do we really have more Gordon Lightfoot tickets? This is a perfect day. This is the kind of day they took the Edmund Fitzgerald down.
Didn't you say you were going to sing the whole song and
the
all the
entire
words?
Song. I'm going to sing the part about the iron ore and the cook coming up to say it's been good to know you. Entire thing. Gordon Lightfoot, 80 years old.
If I could read your mind.
80 years old.
That's amazing.
Right? Still out
going.
There getting it done. You know, my mom's birthday is coming up. I wonder if she was a Gordon Lightfoot groupie.
Really?
She got a milestone birthday coming up. I don't want to say which one, but, you know, the 80
oh,
made me think of it.
Take her, yeah. Sundown.
It's going to be awkward, though, if she rushes the stage. You know what I mean? Gordon Lightfoot gets up, breaks a hip as he's trying to get back to the dressing room for his own safety.
He'll be sitting down anyway, I'm sure.
Am I right about that? Didn't he sit down 30, 40 years ago, too?
I think he always has sat down playing the guitar.
Yeah. Anyway, tickets coming up for that as well. 6:31. We're doing the news right now? Well, quick break. We'll be back with Steve next. 7:20 WGN.
Welcome to Sunday.
Wait a second.
What day is it? The date.
12 May. Thursday.
What year?
Wait, what?
Hello, you there, boy.
Me, sir?
Yes, you, my good fella. What day is today?
Today?
From NBC News in Washington, the longest running show in television history. This is Meet the Press with Chuck Todd.
Well, that'll be, you know, Sunday or later today on MTP Daily. And also, of course, the Chuck Toddcast. And Chuck joins us now. Good morning, my friend.
Well, good morning, Mr. Cochran. How are you?
I'm doing fine. And thank you again for inviting me on the Chuck Toddcast last week. You can download that. You can listen to it. You should subscribe and listen to all of them.
Changed your life, didn't it?
Yes, it did. But I am getting pigeonholed now. I'm getting pigeonholed now where I'm only getting offered podcasts, you know, so that could happen.
Yeah, I hear you.
So I don't know if this is going to be another one of those days where we just don't snap out of it. But is this shoot down of a drone by Iran going to get our attention today?
I don't know. I don't think it's. I think this is more saber rattling by Iran, but this came literally at the moment where you have the president pushing back on his own advisors trying to de-escalate things. But this is the concern that some folks had, that you have Bolton and Pompeo wanting to put Iran on notice. And Iran obviously wanted to push back, and the concern was one incident like this, and the president feels cornered that he has to do something. I just think that the most unpredictable player here, obviously, is the president, right? He, you know, I don't know if there is a single strike here. I don't know if that's what happened here, but we'll see. I think there is going to be a lot of pressure on the president by Bolton today to say, you have to respond. You have to respond. You have to respond to some action. But what is a proportional response, right? And it's hard to come up with a proportional response to the shutdown drone.
Yeah, the thing is with Donald Trump, because he's all about the Benjamins, a $120 million piece of equipment gets blown out of the sky. I think that'll ring his bell as much as anything.
But, you know, again, I go back to, if you want to come up with proportional response, you can, but it does seem as if that there isn't a, you know, I think the more likely action that would probably get wider support and bipartisan support is to essentially send more Navy frigates there to be the escorts in the Straits. Is that, you know, that to me would be a proportional response. You're not actually launching anything, but you're increasing our presence there. That would be the most, I think, sober-minded response that I think would probably get the least amount of tension internally in the debate here in this country.
Meanwhile, back in Looney Land, Hope Hicks shows up yesterday, doesn't answer really the majority of questions. If she answered a handful, that was a lot. Because she was told by the White House lawyers not to, a former staffer being told that there's executive privilege on her testimony. And the strong response by the Democrats were, gosh darn it, we sure wish she had been more helpful. Could the Democrats be weaker?
I guess they could. They could have not called her at all. It is worth pointing out, she didn't have to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And she showed up. That was a small act of defiance against the president. You know, he doesn't want anybody to cooperate at all. So, but she made the decision, and I think this shows you, it's a tiny break. She made the decision to show up and then abide by executive privilege. But she was signaling, she even sent in some documents, she was signaling that, look, she's going to cooperate in any way she can. Obviously, it's up to the president about what she's allowed to say about the White House. So I, you know, as much as, yes, I think the Democrats continue to display amazing sort of weakness here when it comes to trying to address the stonewalling of the White House, I think if I were the White House, I would be a little nervous that Hope Hicks decided to show up at all.
It doesn't end here, but if it goes to courts, it takes forever, right?
It would. No, I think they've been expediting these things a little bit more to try to speed that up. I mean, I think there was one court, one judge who sort of realized, hey, the whole strategy here is to delay. We're not going to let you use the court system to do that. So I think you've seen some expedited rulings, at least, on this stuff.
By the way, when did the protocol of the hallways change where when somebody's walking down a hall and they don't want to talk to anybody, they don't even respond to the reporter, they pretend they're invisible? What happened to, like, no comment, my lawyers told me to talk when we're inside? Now they just walk down the hall like, I can't hear you, with their hands over their ears. What the hell is that?
Well, I thought that was, to me, somebody who hadn't done that in a while. My favorite thing is watching U.S. senators actually do that. Elizabeth Warren, she was a master at it. She would just blow by reporters, pretend they weren't even there. Paul Ryan used to put in headphones. So that he would, you know, that to me is, if you're going to do that, at least put in the headphones. Or at least you're like, I'm on a call. You know, you start mouthing the I'm on a call, or, you know, when you're really listening to the Clash or whatever. But,
right,
you know, whatever it is that you're trying to avoid, at least that to me is a new social norm. It is okay to ignore somebody if you have headphones in.
Right. I don't know what a social norm is anymore. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, she running for governor, or the people of Arkansas going to go, nah, I don't think so?
Oh, I think she's running for governor. I think part of it is that there's no other job to get. I mean, previous White House press secretaries have been able to parlay jobs to Amazon, McDonald's, Facebook, corporate boards, PR agencies. There's just nobody was going to hire her in that realm. So in many ways, her future is political. She tied herself to the Trump train. The downside to that is basically she can't find private sector work right now. The upside is she comes from Arkansas, a red state where the president's popular. So I think when you look at it, her options are politics.
Is there a chance that her replacement will be Anthony Scaramucci, the second round, or maybe John Lovitz? John Lovitz coming in?
We already. I don't even understand what the. Why do we even ask? He's been the press secretary the whole time. I mean, it's just sort of, you mean who gets the salary?
Right. Who gets the $180,000?
Who gets the office with the fireplace?
Yep, exactly.
It is one of the three best offices in the West Wing. That's about all it is, because he's the press secretary. He's everything. He makes every decision. You know, if you want to interview the president, you got to get to him. You know, it ain't up to Sarah Sanders or whoever the press secretary is. So, you know, I don't think he loves the fact that he's the press secretary. Who speaks for the administration just about every day? Trump.
Mitch McConnell is making some news of the wrong kind, and I feel about Mitch McConnell the same way I'd feel about a rash that wouldn't go away. Actually, the rash I prefer. And there's a lot of news this week about his wife, the transportation secretary, Secretary Chow, and Mitch McConnell making a whole bunch of money. At the very best take on it is that it's a little bit shady, and the worst take on it is it's criminal. Where's this story going to go?
You know, I don't know if it goes in that many places. I think it'll get a fair amount of scrutiny and a little bit of watchdogginess by the House Democrats. But you know what was amazing about this story was how Mitch McConnell didn't deny it and
right.
said, "Yeah." You know, in fact, she didn't do all the deals that I wanted her to do. It was a classic, this is where I think Democrats underestimate McConnell. McConnell doesn't care that you don't like him, Steve.
Right.
McConnell doesn't care that people don't like him. This guy is so in love with power and loves to wield it. And again, that story, the Post, look at this. Look at everything McConnell's done with his wife, sort of getting away with all this. And what's McConnell's response? Yeah, I didn't get everything I wanted. There was more that she could. I mean, it was a very, you know, there's that nickname that someone gave him, Cocaine Mitch, and he went ahead and took it. Like, he loves the fact that he sort of wields evil power, I guess.
Does he care that he threw out lines this week, like, why is Jon Stewart so bent out of shape? By the way, the guy that co-testified with Jon Stewart is now in hospice care 10 days later.
Mm-hmm.
Does he care that he's America's creep?
Here's the thing. This is a case where he's borrowing a page from Trump's playbook. You know, you don't pay anybody any respect. Just go right back at him, jawbone at him, and, you know, in Kentucky, it's good politics. You know, confrontational politics. This is what Trump has given us, this world of confrontational politics. So, you know, I actually think the Mitch McConnell of 10 years ago wouldn't have responded that callously. He wouldn't have been the warmest response, but he wouldn't have done that. This is a new world politically. He's up in 2020. And, you know, basically Republicans right now reward confrontation. So if you can't, if you don't have a good response on substance, just yell at your critic.
Yeah, it's funny because you told me this a long time ago, and I fully agree with it. And Pat Brady's here, and Pat and Eric Edelstein on the Democrat side, they all say the same thing. Until people are penalized for their boorish behavior from Trump on down, nothing's going to change. At some point, okay, idealistic Cochrane here, but at some point, don't the people go, you can't mock somebody that's dying from working the pile in New York? Or maybe even people, not that there's an overrun of Puerto Ricans in Kentucky, but yesterday McConnell shot his mouth off about full-bore socialism if Puerto Rico's considered a state. Doesn't he pay a price for this at some point, or is it only if he's threatened?
You know, look, at some point I do think these folks will pay a price for sort of conforming to an era. You know, being a member of this era, helping to be an enabler of what this done, there's a chance it becomes politically unpopular. But right now, it's the only way to survive in Republican politics. I mean, you take a guy like McConnell. McConnell's not that well liked by the Republican base in general. He's never been that well liked. So he's always won his races by fear. You know, in some ways, he's always kept power a little more but with fear rather than affability. And in this case, and again, in the era of Trump, because he's not a popular guy, well, project strength. And in the Trump era, strength is a form of, you know, jawboning people. Yeah, you know, there's different ways to obviously show strength, but in as far as Republicans are concerned, it's sort of the boorishness.
Before we run out of time, Pat Brady.
Hey, Chuck, I got a scoop for you and a question. The scoop is, do you know that Steve Cochran wrote Trump's speech that he gave down in Florida, his announcement speech? Did you like that?
It's the same speech I wrote for him in 2016. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, no, it was very familiar, that's for sure. Good work.
Hey, the question is, the topic you're just talking about, getting in the dirt, do the Democrats have to do that? Do they have to play on his sandbox in order to win, or can they just pat him on the head and go along, or do they have to get into it with him to win?
I think this is part of the debate that's happening inside the Democratic Party. I think this is part of the debate that's happening about impeachment. I think this is also my theory, Pat, is that Democrats will fight above board this election. But if they lose, I think that the turn that the Republican Party, I sort of look at the Democrats in 2020 the way Republicans were in 2012. They had this activist, angry base that was starting to stir, right? And it was in the form of Bachman and in the form of Herman Cain and even Donald Trump at the beginning, Rick Perry. And it just wasn't quite enough. Finally, the parties had said, no, we got to go back to our, you know, old ways. Let's go with Mitt Romney. He's more electable. Well, then he didn't win, right? And supposedly he played by the rules and all of that stuff. in came Donald Trump, in came the appetite for, well, forget it, let's play dirty, let's do whatever it takes. If Democrats lose in 2020, I think they go down that path.
In short order, you and the A-team at NBC will be hosting two nights of knockin', rock'em, sock'em debates action. And we'll be watching, of course. And you know I always appreciate you being here on Thursdays. And
candidates are cooperating. Candidates are cooperating. They're already starting to fight with each other now. It's helping the it's helping us prep for the debate.
Right, right. If you can't hit Biden, hit somebody right below Biden. If you can't hit them, hit the next person down the line. So that's coming up again in short order. And I'll just leave you with this. Regardless of where this story goes, Congresswoman AOC, there's only one type of concentration camp, and it's the one that Hitler was in charge of. And that's what you were referencing. Grow up, take credit for saying something stupid, and move on. That's the last word from me, Chuck.
Look, I don't want to distract anymore from the actual crisis at the border. Let's just focus on the crisis at the border.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. That should be the real debate.
Now, these migrants are, you know, we need to make sure they're being treated humanely. That's our job as journalists. Her job as a politician is to put a lot of pressure on the administration. So everybody's got their role here.
6:55. Thank you, Chuck Todd.
You got it, guys.
See you. Chuck Todd, again, is the host of the Toddcast. That's the podcast, Mark Carmen. And you should give it a listen last week, because when I was on, I really felt like when I sang a couple of my favorite numbers, it threw him off a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Works about 24 hours a day. The guy is amazing.
Yeah, and along with this show, he does about 10 other big shows around the country, 10 to 15, I guess, to promote that. He also does, you know, the prep for Meet the Press on Sunday, and he's the political director at NBC. I mean, you know, look, I'm not out of here till 10:15 most days. He works even harder than I do. All right, coming up next hour, Blackhawks convention tickets. Miguel Cervantes, the lead from Hamilton, was in yesterday. I'll play a couple minutes of that and direct you to the podcast. MVPP. And politics with Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein continues when we come back next in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Steve will be there right after this.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Chicago Blackhawks convention coming up. You know, it sells out every year. This is your best chance to get up close with the stars of the Blackhawks. And meet the team, meet the legends. They'll all be there. And looking forward to seeing you as well. I have four passes to the 12th annual Blackhawks. 12 years. 12 years. You know, it's funny, as I'm looking around this room going, you know, 12 years. Nobody in this room has been around 12 years other than me. Good God, I'm old. 12 years, July 26th through the 28th. The convention features current players, alumni, autograph and photo sessions, Q&A panels, exhibits, interactive games, and more. You go to Blackhawks.com and see if there's any passes left for you to purchase. I think there may be a couple. I mean, use my name. It's not going to help you, but throw it out there. We look forward to seeing you there. So, Super Joe, what number caller would you like to go with?
12.
Caller 12 at for DeBrinket?
Yes, indeed. Okay. And for the 12th annual.
Oh, look what you did there. 312-981-7200. 12th caller is a big winner of Blackhawks convention passes. Let me say hi to Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein. Pat, your place of business is?
Next Generation Strategies.
How's the Lincoln Forum? Anything new there?
Yeah, you know, we're lining up a bunch of stuff be through the campaign season, but probably not until the fall. But thank you. It's been a great year and a half.
And business good otherwise? I mean, on the other side, the politics side?
Yeah, it's all good. You know, okay. It's good. Everything's good.
Anything in Springfield that I need to be concerned with?
No, Springfield's pretty quiet. It's more City Hall now.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that here in a little bit as well. Eric Edelstein, what's your company?
AL Media.
Nice to see you in person, dad of a high school graduate.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. It's been a while. Glad to be back.
Yeah. So your daughter graduated?
She did. Yep.
Did you make a scene at the graduation?
She didn't, but I will tell you.
No, you.
Did I? No, but I will. My wife almost made a scene afterwards because they videotape it. There's only about 80 kids in her class.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And they did it in reverse alphabetical order, so she was last. When they sent out the videotape, they got every kid except for her.
Oh, stop. Really?
Yeah.
What, they shut it down at the end or they ran out?
Technical issues.
Hey, did your kid actually get a filled-out diploma? Because my last two, they've been blank.
I didn't even look.
Yeah, parking tickets.
For real?
Yeah, Patrick last year comes out, it's blank, laughing. Yeah. I still haven't got it. And Grace came out, hey, Dad, guess what? You're 2 for 2 the last 2 years.
You know, I had that at my college graduation. My dad showed up, and they're like, he's got to write a big check for your parking ticket, so you're not going to get your diploma. So he was happy. He was really happy about that.
See, that's why me dropping out just worked out so much better for me. Before any sort of hearing or trial could have gone on. All right, there has to be somebody... Some other parent, somebody who's got it, the video.
Yeah, I mean, there's pictures and all that. It's just, how many times did you watch your video?
Well, look at you, Captain Sentimental. It's your daughter graduating from high school.
I don't know that she cares. My wife was kind of hot about it.
Well, that's why y'all probably got to figure it out.
Yeah.
So,
hey, did they let you have a valedictorian, or is that somebody's feelings getting hurt?
No, they just have participation trophies.
Everybody's the same.
Nobody can be the smartest.
Although I will say, one of her classmates, they vote on who does the speaking, and this girl was hilarious. The first thing she said, you'll love this, Pat, she stood up and said, when I started high school, my dad said it's going to be the best 6 years of my life. She goes, Dad, I made it in 4.
It's a funny kid. That's strong. We'll come back. We'll talk more about politics as we started with Chuck Todd a few minutes ago and get into all the various things that are happening, including the various questions I have for you and why does the Democratic Party have no spine?
How much time do we have?
Well, we'll carve out as much as we can. Yesterday, Miguel Cervantes was in, the lead from Hamilton. You can get the full podcast at WGNradio.com and download it there. You can also go to CochranShow.com for anything on this show. But I was talking to Miguel Cervantes, among other things, yesterday about, okay. How many shows have you done?
About 930. Oh. For whatever it's worth, I'm the most veteran Hamilton that there is, even beyond Lynn. I think Lynn only did it for about 2 years total.
How early do you get to a show?
I get there 45 minutes early. They get my hair done. I put the mic in. And
they can do all that in 45 minutes?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I don't want to give out any secrets, but I'm going to. I get myself ready sort of at about 15 minutes before showtime, and I'm dressed by about 30 seconds before the show goes up is when time I'm finally ready to go.
It's because of the adrenaline rush of, you know, just going out there and popping it right then?
Well, you know, after 3 years, it's, you know, it's kind of...
That's a template.
It's not such a chore to get ready to sort of get myself in the place. I know all the places I need to be. I've gotten my rhythms and my timing down.
Sure.
So, you know, depending on how I'm feeling, my voice, what I did earlier that day, if I played golf or something that day, I kind of got to get myself ready to go based on the day. But generally, I can get ready pretty quickly.
Well, you got to be getting offers right and left now.
I mean, actors get this question all the time. Like, what are you going to do next?
Yeah.
What's next?
They go, what's wrong with what I'm doing now?
What am I doing now? You know, you don't ever ask an accountant, like, what are you going to do next? You know, or a doctor. So what do you have planned for the next
After
one?
Tax season, yeah, what are you going to
exactly.
do then?
Yeah. So in my mind, if I found this amazing job and if I can hold on to it as long
That's
as I
cool.
can, and Hamilton is a unicorn because there's not a lot of shows in the entertainment biz that you can say this is going to last for as long as they want.
Sure.
And not, you know, I've been on Broadway three times prior, and every week we're hoping and praying that we don't get the call about, no, this is it. We're shutting it down.
How did Lin-Manuel Miranda find out about you?
I had auditioned about 23 and a half times for In the Heights
okay.
when it was on Broadway and never cracked that one. Never could get in the door there. I got in the door, but they shut the door pretty quickly.
But did you have any heat, any buzz about you at all?
No, I mean, not. I'd been on Broadway a couple of times, but, you know, third guy to the left mostly. so not really any sort of big thing. And I had auditioned for Hamilton a while back, and they said, you know, I'm not throwing away my shot. And they said, okay, great. Thank you. Have a nice day. And
right.
So I figured that was done, and then
right.
it came back around, and I thought the same thing was going to happen, and then sure enough, 4 auditions later, he's sitting in the room with 25 producers, and here I am telling my wife we're moving to Chicago.
Miguel, thank you, and with all the success of Hamilton, I hope everybody that wants to see it doesn't dilly-dally. It ends in January. Get your tickets while you can.
Absolutely. Come on down. We're going to be here, so we'd love to see as many people as we can.
I know my son is listening to the podcast later today, so let's say it's noon today. He's listening to what you just heard, and he's cursing at me because I gave the wrong web address out to get the podcast. I'm sorry, Ross. Back it down. WGNradio.com/Cochran for everything related to this show. And get your podcast all the time, but you get the full Miguel Cervantes interview there.
The Steve Cochran Show presents the most valuable person on the planet. The MVPP is sponsored by MegaPros. They make it fun to get stuff done.
And now it's time to move on to a little something we call...
The most valuable person on the planet.
Rachel Ray Johnson is president and founder of the National Sisterhood United for Journeyman Linemen. And let's go to Rachel Ray Johnson right now. Good morning to you.
Hi,
good morning.
You are the most valuable person on the planet.
Thank you. I'm still so humbled and honored.
IBEW journeyman lineman, utility lineman, apprentice lineman, groundman operators. I mean, it's a risky job, right? So you can get hurt.
Absolutely. We lose 39 linemen every year on the job, and quite a few hundred are injured.
And this is, again, a cause that I wouldn't have thought of. I think most people probably wouldn't think of it. But to the people mm-hmm. who love somebody who does this kind of work, this is a really big deal. So tell them what your organization does.
So what we do is, following a work-related injury or fatality, the organization, we're 464 members nationwide. And what we do is we come in after the accident and make sure that the wife and widow, or widow in extreme cases, has everything they need to survive and focus on what they need to focus. So we'll provide emotional assistance, financial assistance, physical assistance. Our members have come in and, you know, babysat while the widow made funeral arrangements. I mean, there's really no cap to, you know, basically we assess the whole family need as a whole and then decide from there what we can do that would better help them.
You and your husband, both linemen?
My husband is. I was actually an apprentice lineman, and I was injured subsequently and couldn't return to work. And my husband then got into the apprenticeship, and he became a lineman.
So obviously you have a very personal interest in this.
Correct. I understand what it's like to not have an NSUJL, and it's pretty rough.
Well, I salute the work you're doing. It's very important, and obviously it doesn't affect everybody every day, but this relatively small group of the population is very important to the rest of us because the work you guys do keep the lights on and everything else.
Correct, and there's such a shortage, you know, nationwide that our guys have to travel frequently, and they work long hours and away from home. They miss holidays. They run every time Mother Nature calls, and I don't think everyone goes home and flicks the light switch, but they don't really think what it takes to get that to happen.
Right.
You know?
There's human beings on the other end of that.
Exactly. A lot of them.
You got three kiddos? How old are they?
So my children are 25, 23, and 6.
Not so much kiddos anymore, huh?
No. No, the older two, well, I don't know. Yeah. Sometimes I think the youngest one's easier.
Well, they'll figure it out. Don't worry about it. They will. And they're probably just tired of you and your husband playing Wichita Lineman all day and singing at the top of your lungs. They just had enough. Yeah. Right? Come on, please.
It is a popular song.
Yeah, I'm guessing.
It is a popular song.
All right, so how do we help you guys?
So, actually, you're calling me. I'm in Clearfield, Pennsylvania right now. We're actually having our annual rodeo this weekend.
Okay.
But it's a lineman's rodeo. It's not an animal rodeo. So what the linemen come in from all over the country. They come in teams, and they compete who can climb a pole the fastest or who can do a hurt man rescue the fastest, which is basically how to rescue a guy off the pole the fastest way, because they have 4 minutes to do this. And then they'll do two other events where they, you know, it's like normal stuff on the job that they do. And then, so that's this weekend. Friday night is actually, tomorrow night is the memorial where we honor all linemen that passed away from June to June. So that's this weekend in Clearfield if you happen to be in the Pennsylvania area. However, there are other programs and ways to donate through our website at nsujl.org. There is a dollar for your brother where you can donate a dollar a week or a dollar a day or whatever your, you know, budget is. Right. To go towards assisting a family, there's a lineman's child where we send presents to children of linemen who were killed on the job on their birthday. And then we're also networking with some nonprofit camps nationwide to get these children to their camps, depending on what their needs are. If they need, you know, a grieving type camp, or if they're beyond that and just want to go to baseball camp, whatever it is that we can help the children. We also have the John Plant Scholarship Fund, which is named after the brother that was killed in 104 that actually started the organization, or his death was the start of the talk,
sure,
which became NSUJL.
Well, you got it all covered. By the way, it's NSUJL.org, right?
Correct. National Sisterhood United for Journeymen Linemen.
All right. Well, listen, have a great weekend. I know you're going to be super busy, but thanks for telling your story here.
Thank you.
Rachel Ray Johnson. Most valuable person on the planet right there.
And what a unique organization.
Right?
Never heard of anything like that.
Nope.
That's really cool.
And it just goes to show, no matter what's going on in your world, if you want to help, there's ways to figure that out. 217 texter for Eric Edelstein. My granddaughter just graduated high school, too. She went to the same Springfield, Illinois high school all 4 years during the practice ceremonies. A teacher she had for those 4 years was the person who would announce her name. It turns out a person, a teacher she'd never had and didn't know her, announced her name and said, instead, and during the ceremony itself, mispronounced both her first and her last name. We're taping it. She was very upset and distressed, as was her family. If one looks at her last name and says it phonetically, you can't goof, but this lady, well, who knows? The momentous occasion is sadly now a bad memory. I'm sorry to hear that.
And you usually have it phonetically on the cards you read.
Right.
So you should
and
be able to practice
know,
that.
If you don't know, get it right.
Yeah,
yes.
Practice it. If you're responsible, an adult responsible for reading the names, practice the night before.
I tell you, if anybody listened to me through the years, you know I'm super proud of my kids, as most parents are. But my daughter, Amy, when she graduated from Illinois Wesleyan, tripped. She was going up to get her diploma.
Oh, no. Did she have heels on?
Yeah, she had heels on.
Oh.
And she tripped. Now, that could have gone any number of ways, including, you know, me doing something, you know, I'd regret later. But she handled it so brilliantly. She stood up. She pumped her fists into the air.
Everyone cheered.
Yeah, and everybody cheered. And I was really proud
That's
of her.
Awesome.
Turned out what could have been, a terrible incident into a win. So there's lots of ways to handle this stuff. But certainly this kid should not have had to have both names mispronounced. We'll come back with Eric Edelstein and Pat Brody shortly. First at 7:31. Your headlines are next at 7:20 WGN.
This is 7:20 WGN Chicago.
Oh, by the way, the parents who started a fist fight at the Little League game in Colorado, 7-year-olds playing on the field, a 13-year-old umpire made an unfortunate call or missed call about a batter batting out of order. You can pick the video up anywhere over the last 24 hours. These are alleged grown-ups, the parents of 7-year-olds, beating the hell out of each other on camera. The police have collected the majority of them. There's one that's still missing because he's a coward, unless he's fighting at a 7-year-old's game. And I wish I could tell you this is an exception, but every year we hear stories about parents losing their minds. So allow me to remind you again, it's not about you. And if you ever find yourself thinking it's about you, go home, pick them up when the game's over before you do something stupid. But we're going to make it a text question. We talked about this yesterday.
Yeah.
What's the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen at a kid's game? Right? 312-981-7200.
I actually think it's getting worse. Is that fair to say?
I coach my kids and morning coached our kids. I haven't done it in a while. So you could be right. I don't know.
Just feel like there's more emphasis on sports now for whatever reason.
But they're seven.
Right.
Well, these are 7-year-olds.
But Zion Williamson is going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft tonight. He started working out at 5 a.m. when he was 9.
Okay, but here's the difference. Zion Williamson.
Right.
I hate to break it to anybody listening right now. Your kid's not a pro.
Right.
Your kid's in all likelihood not going to be a pro.
Right.
So, if your kid does have some exceptional talent, it's already been identified by specialists.
If they could have a sport for life that they can play, whatever it is, baseball, tennis, golf, whatever, that's a great win for a parent, is it not?
I think you ought to play all sports. That's the thing, too. If you kids who have marginal talent specializing and they don't play everything, I think you ought to play everything you can.
John McEnroe's asked by parents about, when should my kids start focusing? He says, well, you know, I played everything until I was 11, 12 years old. Okay, you asked me my opinion.
Right.
I'm telling
That's
you.
That's my opinion.
I had a pretty good career, but you do it however you want to do it.
The job is to learn the game, learn how to be a teammate, and to have fun. Anything that gets in the way of that, it's your fault as a parent.
I'm watching this video right now, and they are beating each other.
It's just outrageous.
It's the brawl game,
they're
calling
it. Wow, it's just outrageous.
Yeah.
Sounds like the Little League umpire couldn't keep things under control.
Totally. That 13-year-old let that game get out of hand. Hey, call it the same way in the beginning as the end, kid. I think I've told the story on air, but when I was coaching Ross's team, I'd make that speech at the beginning of the year, it's not about you, it's not about you. I suspended a father. I said, you can come to the games. You're going to sit at the left field or the right field foul pole. Pick it. And for the rest of the season, one folding chair at one of the foul poles because he was kicked out. It's just outrageous.
Good job, Steve.
It's not about you. And fortunately, most parents and most coaches know that. But for those of you that don't, stop it.
I fired a fellow coach once. I was the head coach. I had to fire him.
taken a little too seriously, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was volunteer position.
Yeah.
I'm like, sorry, you're really messed up.
No, I totally get it.
I'm going to cure cancer. Wow. Why the hell didn't you do that over the last 50 years, Joe?
We will come up with the cures to many, many problems, to many, many diseases, including cancer.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
How can I try to explain when I do, he turns away again? It's always been the same, same old story.
It was Donald Trump Jr. who was screaming about Joe Biden should have cured cancer. Less than an hour later, his father, the president of the United States, says, elect me again and we'll cure cancer. I mean, you can't make it up. That's why Julia Louis-Dreyfus and all the kids from Veep had to get off the air. There were no more stories to tell. The real stuff was just too frightening and too true. Eric Adelstein's here. Pat Brady's here. Let's start with you, Eric. What's wrong with the Democrats? You got 4 minutes.
Really?
Answer it.
Really?
Here's my now you know my problem. My problem is we know what Trump is, and this whole notion that he's going to fire up the base, or the base going to be fired up by an impeachment inquiry, is ridiculous. The base is already fired up. They're going to show up to vote.
Here's my analogy today. Ready? It's like a hostage situation where you have the person holding the hostages who's insane. And
so far, I'm tracking
the SWAT team, and the negotiator has never seen anything like this, and doesn't know how to deal with this person. And that, and honestly, I think that's where the Democrats are right now. I think that's where the country is.
So we need Bruce Willis.
We need The Rock or someone. But I do mean it. I mean it. You touched on it with Chuck a little bit. Is it? Do you get into the dirt with him? Do you rise above him? Can you rise above him without seeming like you're dismissive of all the people who support him? It's a very tricky thing. I mean, there's a lot of metaphors for him. When you play poker against a crazy person who doesn't follow the rules, mm-hmm. you don't know how to play against them.
Well, I agree with you 1,000% there, because Pat Brady, we've never seen anyone like this. Even though we know who Trump is, he's the same guy he was in the 80s. Just now he has the most power that anyone on the planet has. And he, as you pointed out to me the other day, and I think it's absolutely right, the best chance he has of winning is if Democrats pick the wrong candidate. That may be the only chance.
It's all up to the Democrats. If they pick the wrong one, he wins. Because there are, I think, and there are a lot of people around here even that can't stand Trump but aren't going to vote for Elizabeth Warren. They'll put up with Trump just on the business economic side of it, but they don't like the socialist talk.
I mean, I think the best way to handle him, Stacey Abrams, who you know we do work for and big fans of.
We had the Georgia governor's race stolen from her.
Yeah. She,
literally stolen.
She was on one of the national nighttime shows when Trump was considering calling a national emergency for the border crisis. And she said, we just deal with him the wrong way. We just have to say, you're wrong. That's illegal. We're not gonna play into your megalomania and when you throw your little childish fits, and we're gonna sue you because you're wrong.
But this is what I was asking Chuck about earlier, and I agree that, and we've been saying this for 3 years, ignore him. But the way this gets covered, and this is why he won the primary last time anyway, is
right.
Whoever makes the most noise does the most outrageous thing. Everybody has to play on his field.
Well, here's the irony.
Yeah, but there's nobody who does what he does.
Because nobody's that pathetic.
That's the one thing he's good at, making noise.
And the media is complicit in this. But I don't blame them, because we're in this perfect storm where journalism is trying to figure out how to make money. What happened in 2015 and 16 is even the esteemed New York Times and Wall Street Journals and the broadcast networks, when they put Trump in their headlines, they got clicks.
Well, CNN in particular.
And they made money.
Yep.
And so
CNN put him on if he sneezed.
So now he gets covered. These tweets get covered as if they're White House proclamations, and then it drives the news cycle. So in a sense, it is Donald Trump's world, and we're just all living in it.
Exactly,
right now.
And it's even worse than it was the last time, because he's president, and they're journalistically have to cover it.
Right.
They can't ignore him.
But if you're going to look, here's what we know. We know Mitch McConnell is a prodigy of Satan, and we know that Mitch McConnell and Democratic leadership is not going to, or Republican leadership. leadership, I should say, is not going to do anything. For the Democrats not to do anything is absolutely insane. For even over and above and beyond your constitutional authority and the requirement that you oversee the executive branch. When the attorney general refuses to show up, you file contempt charges that day. You don't consider it. You don't go back and negotiate. You just do it.
I agree. But I worry more broadly the sort of overall coarsening of everything. And I don't mean to sound, you know, like, oh, back in the good old days. There weren't good old days. But I do worry. I was having lunch with some law school classmates yesterday, and they were saying it pervades everything, where everyone thinks they don't have to tell the truth. Nobody thinks that there are objective facts. Nobody thinks they have to listen to anyone else. And that is the example of the president.
I do. Okay. Pat does.
But a generation of kids are going to grow up where they say, well, the president didn't have to do it. Why do I have to do it?
Yeah, there's a whole generation.
If you've got parents that allow that.
Well, just keep it to politics. There's a whole generation of young Republicans that watch this that are still in the party and think that's the way you do
things. That's the way you win. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if we allow that, we allow that. But that's my point. The Democrats can't control what goes on entirely. But we know 35 to 40% of the people who are engaged enough to vote are all the people Trump has.
Right.
The only way you're going to get the 51% you need on the other side and to control, more importantly, the Electoral College, is to get people up and get them out to vote.
Agreed. I would say, though, it's not the responsibility of the Democratic Party. You know who it's the responsibility of? The electorate. And it's a responsibility of this country and everyone who has a chance to have a voice in 2020 to say, I'm not okay with this.
Right. Well, you know my policy. If you don't vote, don't bitch.
Right.
But we also live in a time where I don't believe 4 more years of Trump is survivable. And I don't mean that in some, oh, the curtain's coming down and it's over. But the type of problems we can get into on any given day,
sure.
I'm amazed something horrible hasn't happened beyond the horrible stuff that's happened already.
But you know how the way the founders wrote the Constitution, where they wanted to make sure the president wasn't an indispensable man.
A king.
You know, it finally happened where they anticipated. And I think your frustration is there are constitutional provisions, and Mueller teed them up for taking on a president like this. And, you know, the Democrats are. Because
but it's a political calculation, too, and that's the beauty of the thing. Yes. The House is responsive to it. And people, I just don't think, want impeachment. We're that close to an election. Just have an election.
Right. The other thing I'm hopeful of, Chuck touched on this. We said this, Pat, at the beginning of the Trump administration. The key to his political survival would be the Republican senators.
Right.
Would they cave to him or would they stand up to him? They've caved to this point. But I think to Chuck's point, will there be consequences for people who were complicit in this era down the road? And we don't know, but that's what you got
to
be hopeful for.
That's the thing that's amazing to me, too, though. And I agree with everything you guys are saying. But we're not guaranteed down the road.
No, we're not.
And there shouldn't be one young man or young woman, by the way, from the families of Trump supporters in all likelihood, who's going to die because he got us into some sort of war that we didn't need to get involved
in. I think his biggest challenge is going to be this Iran thing. This could be a really big, big either plus or minus for him. And I think he's scared to death of it. I would be. I think that they are trying to push his buttons.
Yeah, I mean,
they know he doesn't listen to anybody.
Well, and their regime is organized around the United States being evil. That is the operating principle.
They have a real army.
Right. It is a real zero sum game.
Yeah.
So the idea that I'm going to talk to them and all that, and we're going to work something out, that's not how they organize. So that's a dangerous proposition. And what's the end game? Occupation? Regime change?
No, it's again, it's Iran, I mean, too. It's all bad.
What's the end game?
There is no end game.
Yeah.
There is a ton of text coming in. We'll come back, talk a little local here with Springfield and Chicago as well, but I thought this one starts it off well. Worst thing you ever saw at a kid's game, 6-3-0, I saw two parents get into a fist fight at a Cub Scout Pinewood Derby. I don't even know how that fight would have started.
Oh, some people rig
my car's
cars.
Faster than your car.
Yeah, the weight
people
exceeded
them.
The weight issue.
Yeah.
Oh, so in other words, it was legit.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure.
312-981-7200. If you've seen something ridiculous at a game, this all goes from the Colorado 7-year-old little league family fist fight of idiots that's all over your internet. At 7:52, back with more in a moment. We got to take one more break before the top. Before I do that, though, because I want to come back and talk a little Springfield and Chicago before we're completely out of time. Dean is off today. Is he off today or is he on? No, he's flying back today. Dean is on the way back from London. Josh Hill will join us again, your buddy from?
Fansided.com.
Yeah, we like him. I mean, you're still on the fence, frankly, but we like him.
I'm
warming up to him. You guys seem to love him from Tuesday, so that's cool.
We'll get a bunch of these texts on the air, too, and please check out the latest edition of the Steve Cochran Everything podcast this week featuring Mr. Skin. Yes, the incredible Mr. Skin. It's not for everybody, but if you give it a listen, I think you'll enjoy it. 7:57, more with Eric and Pat in a second. Just ahead of the news on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Pat Brady, Eric Edelstein here. We didn't talk about this, but the Orlando Sentinel has already done an endorsement for 2020. Their endorsement is not Donald Trump.
Yeah, I saw that.
So, entertaining.
And that paper has endorsed Republicans in the past.
And that endorsement,
it was wishy-washy because they couldn't decide if it was the lies, the misogyny, the sexism, danger, the offensiveness, the coarseness, or the incompetence.
Ridiculous, don't you think?
Just pick something.
I blame the media.
Yeah.
I think that paper's endorsed Republicans every time but once in its career.
Is that right?
Yep.
All right. Pat Brady, Springfield, give me an update.
Nothing. Just governor signing all the legislation they got done in the last session, and debates over the casino thing's going to be rolled out, and the marijuana thing's going to be rolled out. Big debates on how the capital money is going to be spent. So, again, a very successful legislative session for the governor and the Democrats.
State police said we have no way to test if somebody's impaired on the side of the road. What are we doing about that?
Well, that's a problem. That was one of the debates down there, that this was more of a revenue grab than it was actually probably a good necessarily public policy that's been debated, and that is a question. But there is, under the law, you can be charged while driving while impaired, but there's no test if you're under the influence of marijuana.
Do you agree with my test?
What's your test?
My test is you take a can of Pringles and you lay the Pringles out in a straight line. And if they can pick them all up in a straight line and eat them, they're obviously wasted.
You know, I'll bring that up. I'm sure.
Or if you're driving below the speed limit, that's clear.
Right. And you're afraid that people around you are all there on the road to get you, that kind of thing.
I think the new strains are a little different. And
yes, they are.
Very dangerous. Stronger, not, very dangerous and very
nothing
dangerous
to joke about.
Well, thanks for killing that moment. Lori Lightfoot's taking some heat, Eric Edelstein, for hanging out with Oprah and other things. Fair or unfair?
Unfair. I think she's doing a terrific job. She's off to a great start. She walked in there and seized control of that council. It's obviously very early. Huge problems. Difficult job. But, I think there was a lot of questions. Will she be able to organize that council, get her administration off to a good start? And I think she's passed these first tests with flying colors.
Didn't she like the way, in that issue, her response? She's really fearless.
She
there
is
There was
fearless.
No apology. Listen, this is what I did. This is why I did
no.
it.
No.
That's why I did it.
It seems like one columnist or two columnists who are giving her a hard time about that stuff as if they need to find some controversy. But she
is. One of them rhyme with Cass?
She is. Is fearless.
It wasn't gas.
Oh, it wasn't.
And she's principled. And, you know, that's a mighty combination in politics. So,
and her not being a politician, and she's not a politician at all.
Right.
So there's no spin on it. And I think that's very attractive, don't you? To voters.
You know, I was reading something Steve Kerr wrote before the NBA Finals where he was like, our attitude is, and I'll use an appropriate word, which is screw it. Like, we're just going to do what we do and do the best that we can and let everything else take care of itself. And that's sort of the way she operates, and it's great. And I think it'll be good for the city.
Last thing before I let you guys go, unless you have something else you want to throw in, Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Steve Kerr, the University of Arizona, just for what it's worth.
Yeah, I heard that. Sarah Huckabee Sanders wants to be governor of Arkansas. You guys ready to endorse her? Or? She also is up for being the first mascot at Disney's new Liar Land.
Hey, if they want to secede from the union, I'm all for that. She can just get down there and they can become their own country.
Some lovely people in Arkansas, beautiful part of the country.
Her dad was governor?
Yes. Yes, he was. Governor Huckabee.
So it's like a legacy thing. So it's not just in Illinois that you can be born into it. She was born into it. So it's her birthright.
I don't think she can win.
You don't?
No. I think the people of Arkansas are smarter than that. But we'll find out.
Yeah.
I've been surprised about a lot of things in the last couple of years. So, nice to see both of you. Any last words? Or am I kicking you out because I want to say hi to our friend here quickly?
I've been kicked out of better places than this, Steve.
I doubt that. I really doubt that. Mark Gibson, head honcho, big shot over at State Farm for years, running advertising and marketing and promotions, and frankly, a genius in all of those. What are you doing now?
Well, I am teaching at Illinois State University in the marketing department. Loving every minute of it.
Is there any chance Pat Brady could get in?
We'd have to take a hard look at his transcripts.
Be an Aunt Becky situation, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it sure would.
You'd have to be on the rowing team?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. We'd have to do something like that.
Fair as much. You liking teaching?
I love teaching. Great students, great atmosphere. Kids really want to learn, and it stretches me to learn what they do digitally, because this world is so much different than when I went to school years and years ago.
What shape is State Farm in without you?
They're doing well.
They're still in business?
They're doing very well. You betcha. Okay. You betcha.
Well, congratulations. It sounds like a great place.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Great to see you. And you look great.
Thank you very much. Yeah, yeah, we've, over the last 5 years, lost a lot of weight. So I feel great. And
good for you, man.
Listen to you every morning. And you got to know, there's a lot of people downstate.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Who listen to the Cochran Show and WGN.
That's appreciated. I'll say hi to your friend Orion, too.
Do that for me, please.
So, Eric, Pat, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
See you, Steve. Congratulate that graduate is what I tried to say.
I will.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Dean Richards right now laying back on a flight back to Chicago, being fed shrimp cocktails and having champagne poured over and over again, hopefully in a glass. So we asked Josh Hill to come back. Now, again, this is a friend of yours, a guy that you work with at
Fansided.com. Yes, he's a friend of mine. He's a coworker.
He's kind of your boss, isn't he? Isn't he in charge
of
you?
Let's not go crazy.
Yeah, I think he's probably in charge of you. And Mark Carmen, all jokes aside, does great work at Fansided. And you put up videos all the time of cool stuff going on in the world of sports. And check it out.
Just tweeted out a new one, Steve. I created Zion Williamson.
Oh, you did?
Yes, because the guy's not human. So I you know.
You monster created him?
I went like mad scientist type of thing.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, so I took all the parts of everybody that I think went into making
Nicely
him.
Nicely done.
So
I don't think Josh should be your boss anymore.
Thank you so much.
Josh Hill covers sports, but he also covers entertainment at Fansided. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning. Yeah, the car making Zion. That was a fun time. He's a mad scientist. He's mad. I guess he's a scientist, too.
Yeah, well, they ran into each other. All right, you made a point in a note you sent me. This could be the worst summer for movies ever. Why?
Nothing's working. Everything seems to be bombing, and there's a number of different factors that seem to be going into that. I mean, Men in Black came out, Dark Phoenix, the new X-Men movie, Godzilla. Did you know they made a new Shaft movie?
I heard a rumor.
Yeah, those all bombed. They're not good. The only thing that seems to have done well this summer is the Avengers movie, and I think, those are all really bad movies, but the way we consume movies are different now, too, because the things we hear about are Bird Box, these Netflix movies that are coming out, because it's so much more easier to consume things on your couch, not have to go out and spend $40 on a ticket and on popcorn and on soda and all this kind of stuff. So I think that that's kind of affecting it. But it would also help if they put out good movies, which so far they haven't been doing. So that's kind of all factoring into this very bad summer. When usually summer movies used to be an event month.
Yep.
It used to be the best time of the year. All the big tentpole blockbuster movies are coming out, and none of them seem to be working, and nobody seems to go begin to see them.
Are we seeing a glacial shift in behavior here, the same way we see retail being affected, where people are shopping at home? I mean, people are still going to go out to the movies, aren't they?
They are, but now you have to go out and see something that's an event, like Avengers Endgame, where if you don't see it on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you're going to come back to work on Monday and everybody's going to be talking about it. But that's very hard to do. Like, you'd think that a Godzilla movie would do that, where you'd have to go out and see this movie on the big screen. You have to see Godzilla on the largest screen possible. And that's just not the case. And I don't know if it's a marketing thing, because the way you market movies are a lot different now than they were back in the 90s or even the early 2000s, when you can put out a trailer and everybody's going to watch it. Now you have to do it on Instagram. You have to make your movie memeable so that you can get into the conversation and stay in the conversation the way something like a Stranger Things does, which isn't a movie, it's a TV show. But we talk about it, and we can watch it at our own convenience at home. So those are all things, I think, that are going into it. Movies aren't going anywhere, but
right.
I think we're going to have a little bit of a lull now
As they rejigger and figure out how to bring people back into the theater. Mark Carman, do you and Chelsea go to movies?
We've had some movie moments, Steve, that actually caused some problems where I didn't want to buy her a fountain soda at the theater because it's $7 for a soda, and she had snuck in some popcorn she brought the Skinny Pop, you know, she put that in her little pouch there, and she had all this stuff. We had candy too, but she didn't bring the Diet Coke, and I'm like, why didn't you just bring a can of Coke? Well, will you buy me a Coke?
Couldn't you look at it the way that you've saved all the money on the other snack, so why wouldn't you get her a Coke or a Diet Coke?
Nah, it's a bad buy, whether you've saved it or not. I actually think, that, for real, why not lower the prices for concessions
in
here?
General?
Yeah, to get people to come.
Well, they may have to do that, don't you think, Josh?
Well, they've raised the prices in concessions to offset the cost of people not paying for tickets. So that's why you look at some of the trajectories, movies aren't losing money the way that you think they might. That's because they're making it up because they charge $8, $9 for a little bit of soda. They're kind of gaming the system that way.
Marcia, do you guys go to the movies?
Oh, not too often.
Did you go more in the past, or is it related to the kids' age?
Yes. Now...
You just don't see stuff you want to go to?
No. I don't have time either.
Well, there's that.
This whole reserving seats thing, too. I'm sitting there watching whatever movie it was, and these... elderly couple comes in and they're like trying to, like, in the dark, trying to figure out if it's their seat that they reserved. Mm-hmm. Like, just pick any of the seats in the row. They're all great.
They're all open.
The screen's right in front of you. You know, you don't have to be in 5 and 6, 7 and 8 are great.
No,
were you going to say, Mary?
It's just so much easier to sit at home. Like, Josh, yeah. I was going to watch last night that murder mystery, which is a big thing now with Jennifer Aniston and Adam Sandler.
Yep.
It's on Netflix.
Yep.
It's like, why would, like, great actors and actresses like the two of them decide to do a movie that would go on Netflix versus a movie at the theater? What's in it for them?
Well, that's the type of movie that even 5, 10 years ago, that's coming out on a holiday weekend, and it's a huge, you're seeing the posters all over bus stops and billboards all over the place. That used to be an event movie. Now it's on Netflix because Adam Sandler has his deal with Netflix, but kind of like what you're saying, it's so much easier to go and watch a Jennifer Aniston, Adam Sandler movie if you're just sitting at home where you don't have to convince other people to go out and see it. I think they're getting ahead of the game a little bit, but you're right. That used to be the type of movie everybody would have to go see. That was the romantic comedy of the summer that earns $300 million at the box office. And now we have to listen to whatever Netflix says for their numbers, number of people that watched it over a weekend, because, you know, it's on a streaming service and not on the big screen.
And it got huge numbers, too. Yeah, it's crazy.
Space Jam 2, the cast list is out. This should mean a lot to you, Carmen. This is a Hoops movie.
I am very excited here, Steve. I can't wait to hear Josh tell me that it's not going to be as good, though, as Space Jam 1, because Michael was in Space Jam 1, so this can't be as good.
Well, LeBron's probably in it, right, Josh?
Yeah, LeBron's in it. I was waiting for Carm to go on the Michael Jordan trip here. No, but Space Jam 2, that is the question about this movie. Is it going to be better than the first one, which, to be fair, isn't a good movie if you're thinking about it cinematically.
It's not a good movie. As a matter of fact, it's quite a bad movie, except it was cool to see Michael Jordan.
Well, Bill Murray and Larry Bird. And
I thought
it was a cinematic genius. It's right up there with On the Waterfront.
Really?
And,
Godfather 2?
Right
no,
there.
It's a bad movie.
Well, now you're going to have Klay Thompson and Damian Lillard and, of course, Anthony Davis and some WNBA players, which I think is actually, that's the cooler part of it.
That's good.
Whereas the first one was all Michael Jordan and Bugs Bunny, and it was cool to see the crossover. And it was cool to see because Michael Jordan was a huge part of pop culture in the 90s. I don't think LeBron is as big a pop culture as Michael was in the 90s, but he's using his influence here to build up guys like Dame Lillard and Anthony Davis, Klay Thompson, who's kind of the quiet guy of the Warriors, but he's got a personality. And then the WNBA players, Diana Taurasi is involved in this reportedly. That's going to be really cool to see because then you're crossing over into a different thing where we're widening the audience and we're showing that basketball is more than just the NBA, which I think is an important thing to conversation to have on one hand, but then to show that in a movie that we know, I mean, contrary to the conversation we just had, we hope people will go to the movie theater and see. I mean, if LeBron James and Bugs Bunny and Diana Taurasi are in a movie, you're going to assume that people are going to go and see it. The question is whether or not it's going to be better than Space Jam. So now that we have the Michael versus LeBron conversation, we're going to have Space Jam 1 versus Space Jam 2. I don't know if I can handle that.
Yeah, probably be less of a conversation, but I get it. Texters say, look what the Atlanta Falcons did. Made more money than ever with the value model.
Yep.
Lowered the price on everything.
Yep.
Another texter said, based on what Mark is saying, it sounds like it's going to be a cash bar at his wedding.
well, we're considering that, sir. Thank you very much. It's a good idea.
New Spider-Man movie, Spider-Man the Toddler, is out. Any good?
Yeah, it's actually really good. It's been getting a lot of good reviews, and from what people can say about it, it takes the story of Avengers Endgame and moves it into kind of a new era here, where all of these characters that we came to know over the last 10 years are now kind of out of the running, and we have to come up with new characters. And Spider-Man, specifically Tom Holland, the actor, is being tasked with ushering it in. And it seems to be working. Jake Gyllenhaal is in the movie, and he's really good, reminding us that, hey, Jake Gyllenhaal, when you put him in something, he can be really good. He can carry a movie. But this kind of, I'm wondering if this is going to save the summer. We had the conversation about how we've had all these bad movies. Here's a good movie, a superhero movie that we assume people are going to go and see. Is this going to save the summer? Is this something that people are going to go to the theater and see? And it seems so far from what the critics are saying and from what we've seen, yeah, this is going to be worth seeing. And it's an Avengers movie. How can you not?
Last word before we wrap up. Carrie Underwood's getting sued for the Sunday Night Football song. Somebody else claims they wrote it?
Yeah, Heidi Merrill in 2017 said that she and her Ford songwriter team brought the Game On song, the one that's very close to the one that we hear on Sunday Night Football.
Well, let's listen. This is. Can you give me Heidi Merrill first? Here you go.
Comes the storm, can you hear it? 100,000 strong, can you taste it? On the tip of your tongue, are you ready? Let's get it on.
All right, that's Heidi Merrill. Can you give me Carrie Underwood? This is the Sunday Night Football song from NBC.
Everybody's ready for the party. Anywhere coast to coast. Come on, we're just getting started.
I don't think so.
Version 1 way better.
Version 1 was better, actually, but it's not the same song. Anybody hearing the same song there?
I'm not hearing it.
Same tone, same, type of...
Both songs meanness. Had musical notes.
Yeah, but no.
Yeah, Josh, I'm not hearing it, are you?
Not really. I mean, the question here is, not a lot of people are a fan of the Sunday Night Football song. Does somebody really want to sue to take credit for it? I don't know if that's something that I would necessarily do.
Right, maybe just for that whole thing.
Yeah, I don't hear it. I think it's more of, she's trying to claim that some intellectual property was stolen. They're similar-ish. The music videos are very similar as well. But I don't think there's much of a case here. I think this is Carrie Underwood's song, as it should be.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, you just have to accept what it is and look the other way. Gaga, most of Gaga's music I wrote originally. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah. You know?
Josh, you're great, man. I appreciate you coming on again. Where do we find you?
Fansided.com. You can follow on Twitter at JDaveHill.
Thanks for doing this again. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime.
Sponsored by Ravinia. Again, sponsored by Ravinia. We got somebody from Arkansas who texted in as well and said, we're not electing Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
You sure about that?
Listening this morning in Arkansas. Well, we'll find out. We'll come back with some texts on this nightmare nonsense in Colorado. Parents beating the hell out of each other at a 7-year-old baseball game. Does it go on here? Of course it does. Some people texting in with stuff they've seen at Little League games. Snap out of it, people. I'll tell you some of these stories in a second.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
All right, it is 8:30. Here's some texters chiming in on this youth sports nonsense. Again, it's not about you. It's about the kids on the field, on the ice. Ugh. 6-0, youth sports has gotten worse with the proliferation of travel teams. Parents spend a boatload of money. And their expectations are higher. Then they act out if something happens they feel gets in the way of their son or daughter getting a college scholarship or making it to the pros. Fact is, less than 0.01% make it to pro sports. They ought to be concentrating on their kids' math scores instead. Well said.
Yes.
I wouldn't add anything to that.
And by the way, it is actually about you. You, in a little bit of a way, you are going to be angry at the ref. You're going to be jealous of the other kid that's out there that's better than your kid. You're going to feel like maybe you could have done more as a parent. All these things are going to happen while you're watching your kid. It's like, and how are you going to handle it all coming? Things are going to come up, and then you say you have to handle it and not act like an idiot.
That's a good point. All those emotions are human, and they will occur to you.
Right.
Why isn't my kid playing more? Why isn't my kid playing better? Why is the ump suck? All of those things.
That kid knocked down my kid. You're going to want to go beat up that kid.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And then...
And your job as a grown-up is to handle it.
Right.
847, you're wrong. Same S word. Always happened. Just more coverage now. Well, definitely more coverage, but I do think the behavior's changed. 708, Little League game parents constantly arguing with an umpire. The umpire falls to the ground, has a diabetic seizure. Goes to the hospital and ambulance.
Jeez.
Not one of the parents would step up to volunteer the rest of the game. They had to then cancel the game.
Oh, my God.
So the people screaming at the umpire couldn't finish the game after the ump was taken off the field. I'm pretty sure they didn't check on him at the hospital either. 847, parents were asses in the 70s, too. Well, there were, listen, you know, I grew up in the 70s, and there's no question there were some jerk parents. But there was just as good a chance that your parents weren't at the game because they weren't hanging on everything you did. They may drop you off. Maybe they coach occasionally. But it was different then. 815, bench-clearing brawl occurred in Huntley just 2 weeks ago at 11-and-under game. Players, parents, and coaches all involved. 847, my 7-year-old daughter's soccer game, one of the parents was running up and down the sideline screaming at his daughter how to play. Started screaming even louder when she couldn't score with her left foot. He did this all while holding his infant son.
That's probably my least favorite parent right there.
Yeah.
Let your kid play the game, man.
Yeah.
You want to, you got, you
shut
wanna,
up.
Yeah, you want to have some practice time? If he or she is down with it, cool.
Right. But see, the thing, the nightmare, if you're going to do that in front of other people.
Right, it's embarrassing.
Imagine what that kid's going through at home.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
6-3-0, my husband got removed from a game because he asked the umpire to announce his signs louder as he was keeping score, and as a scorekeeper, he couldn't hear him. My husband was sitting almost behind the plate. My son was 12 and not happy. 847, parents dumping out their cola drink cup and replacing it with wine at a 13-and-under soccer game.
Oh, boy.
Now we're talking. Here we go.
I believe the word you're looking for is giddy up.
Party time. Excellent.
It depends on what time the game is.
312-9170-200 if you want to add in. All right, coming up, Gordon Lightfoot tickets. And we're going to play a brand new game that Joe and Michael Heidemann just wrote a second ago. It's called Gordon Lightfoot or Lori Lightfoot. I'll give you a clue. You got to tell me which Lightfoot I'm talking about.
It's excellent.
Right?
And this would be the perfect time to take credit since Michael's not here, but I can't do it.
This was all Michael.
Great idea.
Gordon Lightfoot or Lori Lightfoot. Coming up, get ready to play.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
8:41 now. We continue. And in studio, Lincoln Woods' own Renee Bernberg Silberman and her husband, Dennis Joseph Silberman, is what, working on teeth today?
Yes, he is.
You are both children of survivors?
Yes.
Of the Holocaust?
Yes, we are. Both, all of our parents were survivors.
You're both co-hosting a mission trip of about 75-ish, I'm told?
Yes, to the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum.
Yeah, the National Museum is in D.C. I've been there.
Great.
And it's incredibly moving.
Yes.
It's not easy, but I think everybody ought to be putting it on a list to see it. I think kids ought to be required to see it.
I agree with you. I think that there's a lot of important lessons that are contained in the history of the Holocaust. And the U.S. Memorial Museum does a wonderful job of educating people about not only the history, but the lessons of that history. So I'm really excited when I hear that people are going, especially adults, because adults can pass the information that they learn on to kids.
What's it like to be a second-generation survivor?
It's been an interesting journey. I never knew anything different. My parents were very loving and wanted me and my siblings to have a normal American life.
When did you find out that they had suffered?
I knew that they had suffered from a very early age because my mother's story was that she was hidden by a Catholic woman, and that Catholic woman was a part of my life growing up. So when I met this woman...
What a hero.
She was definitely a hero, my hero, and a hero to many others.
Sure.
She hid 4 Jewish people during the war. I grew up knowing that this woman had saved my mother's life. Now, my mother didn't want me to grow up hating people, so she didn't tell me details of the story, how she ended up with Marisha, until I was in my 20s.
What an incredible amount of grace.
Yes.
To be able to not pass that bitterness on.
She was a very optimistic person. And even though my mother had lost her entire family, she felt that we were a gift to her. Her children were a gift to her. And she wanted us to be able to grow up and feel that we could accomplish good things in the world. So she was very optimistic.
Your husband's story similar?
A little different. His parents never really talked about their experiences. Mm-hmm. His father had been in 6 camps and survived. His mother had been a partisan or one of the freedom fighters, kind of on the run the whole war. And they were older when they had my husband, so they didn't talk very much. But the one story that his mother did tell him was about how she basically lived because of the luck of being hidden behind tomato plants. It was kind of a crazy story.
One of those small stories that I'm sure there's thousands and thousands of, but they're incredible.
Yes, every story is unique. Every story is incredible. Every story has an element of luck or somebody helping the survivor in the story.
Well, the reason I asked specifically about second generation is because you literally do not exist without the heroism that saved your mom, your dad, your parents.
Exactly.
So there's a special sort of weight or, I don't know, weirdness maybe about that that no one else could know.
It is a weight, but it is a certain form of resilience also, because mm-hmm. we feel that our lives as being gifts, as being miracles, that we have this strength to let the world know that even in the most evil times, goodness can exist.
Absolutely.
Humanity can prevail. And that's why we are so excited to share all this with, along with the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum.
It's an amazing trip that you're going to be taking. You know, I think about it because we're so overwhelmed with politics now. And you think about our relationship, and forget about the guy in the White House now for a second. I'll try to, if you will. But the grace that goes with the greatness of this country and the greatness of the survivors, because the people of Germany had to survive Hitler as well in a different way. And our relationship with Germany, the way it's flourished for many, many years, in the same way our relationship with Japan after World War II, it's amazing.
Yes, it is. I think it's a testament to people, to human beings wanting to get along, to humanity wanting to thrive. And one of the lessons of the Holocaust is that if people respect each other as human beings and view each other as all having equal rights to exist, that the world can be a better place. But we have to watch out for those danger signs of how a Holocaust can evolve or how a genocide can evolve.
I want to bring Edna Friedberg in. Edna is a historian at the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington. And Edna, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being on. Well, the conversation is fascinating as well. When people come to the museum, what do you recommend?
I recommend that they allow time. Everyone ends up spending more time than they expect. We're right on the National Mall in Washington, quite literally in the shadow of the Washington Monument, and don't think you're going to duck in and duck out. This is troubling history in the best possible way, in that it pulls you in. It makes so many connections to our world, to our own ethical dilemmas, and people are usually there for 2 hours, 4 hours. We have a current special exhibition called Americans and the Holocaust that we launched last year to mark the museum's 25th anniversary. And really, it is the story of us. It is the story of the American people. What did average Americans in the 1930s and 1940s know about what was happening to the Jews of Europe? What did they read in their morning paper while having their first cup of coffee? And it challenges us, I think, to look at our national ideals in a different way.
Demographics, I assume, are across the board. There's kids, there's older folks, there's everybody in between.
There's everybody. We get around 1.7 million visitors a year walking through our doors, close to 20 million a year online. Of our visitors, around a quarter are school kids. I sometimes feel like we get every eighth grade class in the country coming
Good.
In March and
I
April.
Hope you do.
Yep. and about 90% of our visitors are not Jewish, because this is not a German story. It's not a Jewish story. It has those parts, but it's really a human story. It's about the way societies and communities and interpersonal relationships can devolve so quickly when subject to the wrong conditions.
You know, since you have visitors from all over the world, there's no question that you have German descendants, who German nationals who are there standing side by side with Jews who have family members who have gone through this nightmare. When I was at Pearl Harbor, my dad was a World War II guy. I saw Japanese veterans, as a matter of fact, standing side by side with men who had served. When I was at the 9/11 Museum, I saw Arabic men of age, the same age of the guys that flew the planes in. You know, not comparing or contrasting any of these travesties in history, but isn't it amazing that the humanity wins out in the end? I mean, there's some real optimism there.
There is. And to me, actually, the most meaningful visitors who I see at the museum and with whom we, the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, conducts trainings around the country are actually professionals, working men and women who are in positions of influence or power in protecting democracy and promoting human dignity. So, for example, we train every single new FBI recruit in the country. We work with police officers, beat cops and officers in the Washington area and further afield. We work with judges in state judiciaries across the United States. So people who are really there as the safeguards to our democracy, to the values we hold dear, and who can look at their contemporaries or at their colleagues in this period in history and see what went wrong, because Germany was a democracy, a fledgling democracy, not the strongest, but it was a democracy, and it very quickly changed into a government that had harnessed all its resources in the service of genocide. So we see that as part of our mission as the Holocaust Museum in Washington, as the National Memorial, is to ensure that those institutions in the United States remain strong, remain vigilant, and remain cognizant of the precarious position they can be in.
I'm an adopted kid. I grew up thinking I was Jewish, and 23andMe and my birth mom cleared that up. But I've always had Jewish friends, and there was a phrase we always kicked around with, well, you need a good rabbi. Everybody needs a good rabbi. I would assume you see every single day, and the people at the museum see people who go out and they become that good rabbi, regardless of their faith, and they go out and talk about what they saw.
Yes, absolutely. And to me, it's always really heartwarming and reassuring. Like Renee, I am the child of a Holocaust survivor. And as you said so perfectly, Steve, at the beginning, this is not easy history. It's not a fun place to visit. And I find it so gratifying when I see entire families taking time out of their vacation because they know it is important. They know it'll spark conversations that they want to have with their teenagers about something meaningful, about more than just screen time or pop stars or whether their shirt's too short, you know, but about real human ethical issues and what we see our role as being in the world. And it is quite affirming to see how many people recognize the value of this history, whether they have a personal connection or not.
We're going to talk more with Renee in a second, but Edna, what is the website for the museum?
It is USHMM.org, United States Holocaust Memorial Museum.org.
USHMM.org. Thank you for what you do every day, and thank you for the stories.
Thank you so much for having me.
Appreciate you being on. Renee, if you can hang around a second, I want to talk more to you about what's coming up and also the quarterly meetings you do as well for folks.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
It is 8:55, and we continue for a couple more minutes here with Renee Bernberg-Silberman. She and her husband are second-generation survivors, their parents, and the Holocaust. The phrase never again, what does that mean to you?
I think never again originally meant that a horrific time in humanity, that the technology, murder, technologically advanced murder of 6 million people should never happen again. And unfortunately, there have been genocides since the Holocaust. So I think that the phrase really should be never forget, because the more you learn about the history, the more you can work to prevent it from happening again.
Yeah, well said.
So never again is kind of a worthless phrase.
It's a perfect world thing that doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist.
Mark Carmen.
I'm just very touched, Renee, just listening to you talk. And I don't, you know, my dad's a World War II guy too, Steve. So it's, you know, he went in after it was over. He's a part of the cleanup duty, and just it's still emotional for him to talk about the people that went over. It's just a different time. All his friends enlisted, some came back, some didn't, and you know, I haven't been to the museum. I've been to Yad Vashem in Israel, which is. That is quite an experience, as the, you know, that you walk in there and you can just feel it. So I'm assuming that's going out. So I just wanted to thank you for coming in more than anything else. It was really interesting to listen to you.
Thank you, and thank you to your fathers for their service. And the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum is a little different than Yad Vashem, which is also a wonderful institution. But having this museum on our National Mall and including the American experience of liberation...
Mm-hmm.
That's actually how the museum starts, with the story of liberation. It's something that you have to see.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and well worth the trip. Renee Bernberg Silberman and the good dentist, Dr. Joseph Silberman, are leading a trip. Sounds trite. What would you call this?
It really is a mission.
Yeah.
It's a little bit longer than 24 hours, where this group of people will come into the museum, meet some of the foremost scholars in the museum who are wonderfully brilliant people, not all Jewish at all,
mm-hmm.
who have spent their professional careers doing research on the Holocaust, research on genocide, how to alert the world to future genocides. We're going to have a private tour of this exhibit, Americans in the Holocaust. We're actually going to have a tour of the Capitol building Sunday evening, and then Monday we go out to the museum's conservation center,
okay,
which is one of a kind in this country. It's an off-site center where all the evidence of the Holocaust that has been donated, whether by survivors or their family members or liberators, anything having to do with the Holocaust story, it's all restored there and conserved there. And when I go there, I feel like I'm visiting family, because I'm seeing the pictures and the documents that I've donated.
Well, it's got to be very emotional.
It's very emotional, but I feel so good.
Sure.
That everything's being taken care of in such a good way.
Oh, that's great.
And also that scholars that are doing research from around the world, they can access my story.
Right.
They can access my parents' and my in-laws' stories to use as part of their research.
Which is beyond helpful. It's vitally important.
Yes, it is.
There are quarterly meetings that go on that you and, I assume, your husband host?
Yes.
And tell me about those.
We hold quarterly meetings for other children of survivors. Even though we each had a unique upbringing, different socioeconomic class, different neighborhoods that we were raised in, we all had in common that our parents survived the Holocaust. And as such, we feel a bond, and we are interested in things and learning about things that the general public may be interested in, but it's especially interesting to us. So, for example, Steve Pressman is a documentarian who did a documentary about 50 children that were rescued by an American family before the war. He's now doing a documentary on what the church, what the Vatican knew before and during the war,
and
how they reacted. He spoke to our group, which we all had preconceived notions, and it was very interesting in this very safe space for us to share our feelings and our thoughts about what we thought we knew and what we learned from his research. So that's the kind of environment that we try to provide these learning experiences in a safe environment where we can all draw on our past and look forward to the future.
I could talk to you all day. We're not going to have time to do that. I hope maybe you could do a podcast with me. We could talk a little more extensively about it. But before I let you go, did you and your husband, do you have children?
Yes, we have four sons.
What's their experience?
They understand the importance of their legacy, of their history, because they knew their grandparents. They know my mother's story the best. She was very close with them. And they also feel this motivation or inspiration to go out and do good in the world.
Well, that's how you pay it forward, right?
That's how you pay it forward.
Every next generation does their share?
Exactly. That's how they feel, and I'm very proud of them.
That's where you get never forget,
exactly.
As opposed to never again.
Exactly.
You're an amazing person. Thank you. Very impressed.
We all just do our best.
How do we help you?
Get people to go to the museum, to support the museum, to right. understand that the history is important and the lessons are important for the future.
And if anybody's listening, had no idea that you guys existed in this way and want to help, how do they get a hold of you?
The best way would be through the Midwest office of the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. The Midwest office is in Highland Park. If you go,
easy to Google?
Easy to Google, yes.
Okay, great. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
And like I said, I hope we can do a podcast, talk a little more extensively.
Thank you.
USHMM, USHMM.org, that is the website for the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington. And if you're going to D.C. for any reason, please put that on your list. We'll come back with the headlines in just a second, or actually the news in just a second from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
You gotta fight for your right to party.
Raise your hand if you've gone into mass and you've heard this. Crank it up now.
Fight for your right to party.
Block party time. And joining me in studio, you know, people stop me on the street. They go, Father Tom? I go, no, it's Steve. Because we're practically twins. Father Tom Hurley is here. And the world's largest block party coming in Chicago's original street festival. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. 35 years ago.
Yeah.
What else was happening 35 years ago?
And look what you've done. Look what you've done. Now everyone has a street festival.
I know. That's the problem.
So the traffic
problem.
We got
the best
one,
though.
The traffic problem, we blame you.
Well,
in the summertime? Can't get anywhere? It's your fault.
Blame me for everything.
How are you, man?
Good, really good.
Nice to see you, Father.
Nice to see you,
Steve. Nice to have you here. You know, you blessed this studio.
I did.
We just passed 1 year.
That's right.
Just had our 1 year anniversary of sorts.
How's it going? Is it everything pretty
ever since
holy
blessing,
and good here?
Ever since your blessing, I think we're okay. All right, so give me a little history on the block party.
Well, 35 years ago, my predecessor, Father Wall, went into Old St. Pat's. There was nothing. I mean, it was a desert over there in the West Loop. And likewise, there might have been about 50 people that were going there to church on any given weekend. There was no income. There was nothing to do. So you figure, I'm going to have to get some revenue to get this thing off the ground. So he grew up in Chicago like the rest of us, and you block off a street, you get a little music and a little adult beverage and bring some good people together. And lo and behold, 35 years later.
I don't say this being flip at all. Was he a marketing genius? It's a pretty good idea.
Yeah, he's pretty blue chip marketer. Yeah, he's really smart.
So you see a problem, you fix it by figuring out the answer to the problem, but then you got to put it into play. The people that were involved with the church then, they go, excuse me, you want to do what?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was nobody down there.
Right.
I mean, you're going to invite us to this area that was known as Skid Row? And it's like, yeah, absolutely. And 5,000 people came that first.
Is that right?
Here. Yeah, 5,000.
That's amazing.
Yeah. They had the Stanley Paul Orchestra on a flatbed truck. They had draft beer. And it went till all hours of the night, and people had a great time.
Well, it's going to take more than beer for Catholics and others to show up, so what else is happening?
Well, what else we got?
We got music?
We got music. We've got food, of course. Food trucks. Everybody loves the food trucks these days. We've got stuff, because there's so many families in the West Loop now, we've actually got stuff for families on Saturday afternoon from like 2 to 6.
I see the music list here. Motown Nation's going to... I don't see you as a Motown guy. I think you're probably taking that hour off, Motown Nation.
Well, if you see,
are you a Motown guy?
I am. I like Motown. Yeah. I do.
What's your favorite kind of music, Father Tom?
I like pop. I'm kind of a pop guy.
Like, who's your favorite artist? Your Lady Gaga?
I'm a big Lady Gaga. Okay. Yeah, you know, a little Justin Timberlake or something. Or Bieber? How about Bieber?
You like Bieber?
Yeah, Bieber's good.
Oh, you should have stayed at Gaga. Motown Nation, The Walk-In, Seventh Heaven, and 16 Candles all playing. That's a pretty good lineup of music.
It is a very good lineup. They're great local talent, and they always put on a great show, all of them.
Now, what is your role while all of this is going on? I mean, the planning is extensive. Once the planning's complete and you're ready to, you know, let the good times be had by all, what do you do?
I'm the, you know, I gotta shake the hands, you know. I'm the people guy, you know. So
throw a little guilt out there. I haven't seen you on a Sunday lately. None of that.
I always get up on stage saying, "We'll see you all tomorrow," right?
Yeah.
Right? And I wink at him, right?
It is this weekend. What time do you want to start this thing?
We're going to start it on Friday at 5 o'clock, and we'll go to 10:30. And then Saturday, we'll start it up again at 2 and go till 10:30 on Saturday.
And then Sunday, it's back to work.
Sunday, it's back to work. We'll start that at 7 a.m.
That block party kid zone is a good idea, too, because it's kids. It's something cool families can do with the younger kids.
Absolutely. And we have so many families that come down, and it's from our school, from Francis Avery Ward, from our religious ed program, but also from the West Loop. There's just tons of families around us now, which is great. The West Loop is so different now than it was 35 years ago.
Worldslargestblockparty.com. Have we reached a point where the West Loop is so different and is blown up the way it's blown up?
What?
You would like to drive people away? I mean, you would like less people to come in at this point? Is that the goal? I don't want to speak for you. That's not the goal?
No. I don't know if you know this or not, but I read something a couple months ago in the Trib that said that the West Loop has the most millennials in that neighborhood than any other neighborhood in the United States.
I think it's probably true.
Oh, I think it's true.
Yeah.
They can't build those buildings fast enough over there.
No, and if you drive through there and see the apathy, I think it's apparent that there's a lot of millennials in that particular area.
A lot of apathy.
I love millennials. World's largest block party again starts tomorrow night, goes through the weekend. How much are tickets?
You know what? It's just a mere $10 to come in and then
that really is a great price.
It's a great price, absolutely.
$10 gets you in, and then free entrance from 5 to 6 on Friday. I don't know why you're starting off with a bunch of people. They've worked all week. They're bitter. They're going to come over for a happy hour, and you're letting them in free. 5 to 6, that's when you hit them with the big number. You want to get in? $100. $100 to get you in.
$100 for a raffle. We got a pot of gold. Obviously, that's what makes it a Catholic event, because you have to have a raffle, you know?
And you could do that online, or do you have to be there?
You could do that online, yeah, absolutely.
At World's Largest Block Party?
World's Largest Block Party, .com.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't really reviewed any of the notes I ever thought of, though. You haven't looked at a thing, have you? But you're a busy guy. I got it. It's okay. World's Largest Block Party, .com. What do the VIP tickets get me? That's $55. What happens if I give you $55?
Well, I'll tell you what. That VIP section is going to get you kind of an elevated kind of platform.
Seating.
Tented seating. Your own porta potty, better food.
Oh, porta potty at a street festival with access to a potty. Are you kidding
me? That's worth the $55 right
there. That's absolutely worth it.
Forget the food and drink. The porta potty is that's the selling point.
All right, 35th annual. Again, we want you to be there. You have to stick around because we have to talk about everything else in the world in just a minute.
I'd love to.
All right. Father Tom Hurley's here. And you know what? Let's plug the core business. Tell them what you do on Sunday. Come to Mass.
Thing called Mass.
Yeah, come to Mass.
Come worship the Lord.
For those of you that have maybe strayed or wanted to come back.
You're always welcome.
In all seriousness, you looking for a church home? This is a wonderful place.
I think it's a great place. Old St. Pat. We draw people from 200 zip codes. I think we've got,
is that right?
We've got some great energy down there. It's a great place.
Service is Sunday, what time?
7, 8. 9:30, 11:15. Come on, it's getting better.
I was going to say, 7 5 a.m. That's very early for me on the weekend.
5 p.m. and 8 o'clock in the evening.
Do you do all 6 shows?
No. No, I'm like you, just a couple hours.
Exactly. Well said. 9:21, more with Father Tom early in just a second. Worldslargestblockparty.com for all information. Make sure you go. It's going to be a fun weekend. And it looks like you're going to get a break on the weather. The weekend weather looks scary. I think we're going to be okay now.
I hope so. You better tell Tom Skilling this is a matter of heaven or hell for him.
Oh,
you
know? For goodness sakes, Father.
We had some good weather.
Father, gosh, Father, I'm going to do what I can.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Father Tom Hurley's here, World's Largest Block Party at Old St. Pat's this weekend. It seems like we talked about this last time, but I have to ask you again because the world needs some optimism.
Okay.
We're tearing at each other. It's not I'm right, you're wrong. It's you're wrong and you're stupid. It's all of those things. You know, your opinion doesn't matter to me because my side's right. And until you come to my side, you're wrong. I sometimes think, bring me some more Country Town lemonade because the old man's on the porch. But it does seem worse than it's ever been.
Absolutely. And don't you think, I mean, just look on social media.
It's awful.
It's awful. I mean, there's no dialogue on social media. It's strictly accusations and nasty comments. And
the anger.
We've lost the sense of being dialogical, talking to one another.
Is that because...
And respecting one another. We may not agree, but
right.
Can we at least respect and talk about it?
Yeah, and if people gotten away from God, whatever your God is, whatever your religion is, your particular religion is, if people gotten away from it, or are these people that will still come to church on Sunday and act like nothing's wrong?
No, I mean, I think there's certainly people are adrift when it comes to, I think, organized religion. But I think it's more than just organized religion. I just think people are adrift when it comes to even their own spiritual lives and a sense of the sacred, a sense of the divine. And it just seems like that's seems to be more absent, you know? And because, you know, if I just lift up my phone, I get all the answers, you know?
Right.
I'll go to the God of Google.
Yeah,
Google right. gave me all the answers.
And the key is, once you find somebody that agrees with you, never look at anything else, because that's what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one big echo chamber.
Yeah.
You know, I believe in the far right, I watch Fox News. I believe in the left, I watch MSNBC.
Right.
And by the way, the other side, they're completely wrong. The far right and the far left are the problem, but take it out of politics, it's what you said. It's the comment sections on web pages. It's people who post pictures of their kids and say they're proud of them, and then anonymous people rip your kid.
Yeah, it's awful.
I don't get it.
It's awful. It's nastiness. Yeah.
So for
we
all
got to become a kinder, gentler people. You know, we really do.
And I guess it's just ask the question, right? Would you want it to happen to you?
No. No.
You know, would you want people saying those things about you?
Who'd want to be on the receiving end of that?
Don't hit send.
No. Think about it before you hit it.
Yeah, the other thing too is parents don't assume your kid's not one. Don't assume. And by the way, some of the parents are obviously doing this as well. But don't assume your kid's not involved in this, because the bullying that goes on now mm-hmm. of kids is tragic.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Yeah, you hear about it too. It's at young age too. That's
right.
Terrible. What kind of foundation is that?
What do you do for? In all seriousness, what do? For youth ministries? Do you guys talk about social media and stuff like that?
We do. We've got a really robust outreach to those in their high school years. In fact, we've got the first of our four, work tours, or kind of they're out there serving. They're in Kansas City right now. A group, I think they're working with Habitat for Humanity. But I'll tell you what, the neat thing about it with our high school kids, they want to do it. I mean, we had to add trips because, you know.
Well, that's great.
Let's look to the optimism here. I mean, the good stuff, the grace is out there, is that we've got young people that do want to serve. They may not be really nuts about formalized, you know, sitting in mass on Sunday, but they do want to serve, which is really very, very exciting. And the conversations, because I usually go on one every summer, and the level of conversation is terrific. And you know the other thing, too, is the rule for the trips is you leave your phones at home. Can't bring them.
And nobody's fighting you on that.
Nobody fights you on it.
Isn't that cool?
We have a waiting list for kids that want to go. High school kids that want to go.
That's tremendous.
But, and they know it. No phones, no electronics.
And they're still signing up.
You have to be there for one another. Absolutely. And they love it.
That's very cool.
And it's good quality conversation. And talking about social justice issues, like, why am I so lucky and I get to live in a nice home, and then here we are in another part of the country and people are living in squalor and in poverty.
You know? All jokes aside, too, with the millennials care more about changing the world than they do about making money. Gross generalization, but there's a lot of truth in that gross generalization.
Oh, I believe that. I really do. I do believe that. Yes.
I see
millennials and young people they want to do good for others.
Right.
Yeah, that's very encouraging.
We're about to raise the class level. Anna DeVlantis is in studio with us.
Hey, guys. Oh. Good morning. I love this conversation.
You know Father Tom, right?
Of course I do. Hi, Father Hurley.
Hello, Anna.
And I know that because my daughter goes to the school connected to St. Pat's, and they take it very seriously. And she comes home, and she actually challenges me to think about things that I otherwise wouldn't have because of what she learns in school.
Yeah.
And what?
Well, that's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, I just love it. The kindness, the, you know, that kind of thing, the pay it forward, be mindful. I mean, all that stuff. She comes home, and she starts a conversation with me. It just makes it easier.
And our trademark at Francis Xavier Ward, diversity, huh?
Absolutely,
I mean,
true.
It's not just a Catholic school for Catholic kids. It's a Catholic school that hosts this beautiful interfaith ecumenical reality. When I was a kid growing up, I thought everybody was Irish and Catholic, and this beautiful school is one that we celebrate the diversity. It looks like Chicago. You know, there's kids of various cultures and socioeconomic backgrounds and religious diversity, and that's the world into which we want to try to form them.
And they encourage people to bring your personal stories forward and tell the class about what it is you celebrate and how you do it and what your traditions are at home. It's an education.
Well, that's really smart too, right?
Beyond math and science and English.
Because you can get the shyest kid in the room, but if you give them a chance to talk about why their family's fun or special or whatever, I'm sure they step up.
Yeah.
It's nice.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, you're doing good stuff, Father Tom.
I'm trying.
Not like this.
Can I tell you one I heard the other day? It was pretty good.
What's that?
Well,
Because I have one more for you, too, but obviously right, it's your show. Go ahead.
The Monsignor was having a healing service, an anointing service.
Okay, what happened then?
Well, he asked the congregation, is there anybody in particular that might have something that you really need healing for?
Sure.
And so Tony came up and said, Father Monsignor, could you pray for my hearing? And so the Monsignor leaned over and placed his hands on his head and on his ears and just prayed ever intensely, and it seemed like eternity. And finally, after a few moments, he said, well, Tony, how's your hearing? And he said, well, Monsignor, my hearing's not for another couple weeks.
Ripped from the headlines? True story? Well done. Well done. And by the way, don't think for a moment I didn't have that instinctive response where you started the joke and I'm going, is he going to work blue? Do I need to hit the delay button?
No.
No, he's better than that. Before I let you go, don't you want to wish somebody a happy birthday this week?
My mother. My dear mother.
And a big milestone birthday.
Huge one. 90. She's the...
Yeah.
Thank you.
What's her name?
Marianne.
Marianne.
Marianne
Sitting
Hurley.
Ovation for you, Marianne Hurley.
Happy birthday.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. Got a big party for her on Sunday.
You want to blow the surprise what you got her for a gift?
No, I can't.
Because you haven't bought anything yet. Come on.
You're killing me.
Well, you're busy. You got the black party this weekend. It's great to see you.
Thank you so
much. And, you know,
much.
Anytime you need a big mouth for anything, we're here. Thank or more you. Specifically, I'm here. worldslargestblockparty.com for all things related. And if you've not been to Old St. Pat's for any reason and you love a beautiful church and you have respect for that kind of thing, pop your head in.
Please.
So, nice to see you, man.
All are welcome. Thanks a lot.
Happy block party.
Thank you.
9:33. Anna's going to stick around. Anna, we're going to play Lori Lightfoot or Gordon Lightfoot. It's a brand new game. It's sweeping the country.
Oh, no. Here we go.
Coming up for tickets. Stand by for that. And headlines in a moment on 720 WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
All right, through and to 9170200. I need two players for the hottest game show in America, Gordon Lightfoot or Lori Lightfoot. All right? This is for tickets, not to Lori Lightfoot, but to Gordon Lightfoot.
I'm rooting for Gordon, as much as I like Lori.
There's no current tickets available for Lori Lightfoot. Lori Lightfoot sold out. I think we all know that the legend lives on from the Chippewa on down to the big lake they call Gitche Gumee. I don't know if you know this. The lake, it is said, never gives up its dead when the gales of November come early.
Lori Lightfoot. No?
We have two callers standing by. This is for tickets to Gordon Lightfoot. Well, I'll do a test question with you.
Okay.
If I say I'm 80 years old, is that Lori Lightfoot or Gordon Lightfoot?
That's going to be Gordon.
That's correct.
I'll go with Gordon.
Pair of tickets to see Gordon Lightfoot on September 27th at the Copernicus Center. I did say this before, though. September 27th? Maybe move that concert up a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Why?
Well, he's 80. I'm just saying, let's not roll
Come
the dice.
On.
Wow,
he's been doing this 80's for 50
young.
Years.
Gordon's going to 100, Steve. We all know this.
Well, there's no doubt he's still working. Lightfoot's 80-year strong tour celebrates his 80th birthday and features all the hits, including this upbeat little ditty that I sang all through the 70s.
What's this one called, Steve?
This is The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Ah.
Oh, yeah. That's a good pub song.
Gordon Lightfoot in this show also tells stories from his 50-year-plus career. Tickets on sale on Monday, 10 a.m. at the Copernicus Center or at eventbrite.com. And I guarantee you'll have a good time. All right, so here's the way this is going to work. We're going to put the two callers on. All right? And this is Nick, and it's Lori. Let me start with Nick here. Nick, how are you?
Steve, great. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on. Hold the line if you would for a second. Hello, Lori.
No problem. Hello.
Hi, Lori. How are you?
I'm great. You?
I'm good. Thanks for being on. All right. Now, here's the way this is going to work. I will read a fact about Lori Lightfoot or Gordon Lightfoot. Buzz in by saying your name. If you get it wrong, the other person obviously gets a free swing at it after they hear your wrong answer. I like their chances. So be careful if you don't buzz in too early. First person to get three correct wins the tickets. Are you ready to play?
Sure. Ready. I got a question, though, Steve.
Yes.
That's not Lori Lightfoot as a contestant.
Good question. What's the? Yeah, you checked the last name and everything, right, Steve?
I can't go into any great detail at all.
Oh, man.
Differently than she does.
Yeah, and Lori Lightfoot, as far as we know, doesn't live in St. Charles. All right, so here we go.
No.
This Lightfoot's middle name is Meredith.
Ooh. Lori.
Lori?
It's Lori Lightfoot.
I thought we were supposed to say her name.
That's incorrect. That is incorrect. This Lightfoot's middle name is Meredith. Nick, do you have any idea who that could be?
Gordon Lightfoot?
Gordon Lightfoot is correct.
What a trick question.
Gordon Meredith Lightfoot.
That's a trick.
All right, yeah. There's some confusion because our second contestant is also named Lori. So maybe can we, you know, give a nickname or something just so Nick doesn't think that Lori is saying Lori. She's saying Lori because that's her name.
The big L.
Do you really? Do you really?
My middle name is Sue. I'll use Sue. How's that?
Perfecto.
All right. All right.
I like enough, the big L.
And enough whining from Nick and Joe. All right. Fact number two. From a young age, Lightfoot wanted to do big things. Played in a high school band, was on the basketball team, yearbook editor. Did I hear it? Sue?
Nick.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Nick? Who was first? I missed it.
I think it was Nick.
Sue was first.
Yes. Nick was first.
All right, Devonta's made the call. Nick, what's your answer?
Lori Lightfoot.
That's correct, Lori Lightfoot.
5'1 guard.
Lori Lightfoot, 5'1 guard on the basketball
team.
Can
you believe it?
Good dribbler.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Yes.
All right, now, Lori, I'm making up the rules as I go along, or I should say Sue. Since you're down two, you get a free question here. You get a free shot. Are you ready?
Sure.
This Lightfoot was married to a woman named Elizabeth Moon from 1989 to 2011.
I'm going to say that's Gordon.
That's correct. You're back in the game.
Ooh.
Hey.
It's 2-1. All right. Again, 3 is it. So, Nick, all you need is one more for the big win, okay?
Sure.
Here we go. This Lightfoot is a big fan of Justin Bieber's music.
Wow.
Ooh, that's tough.
Nick.
Nick?
Lori Lightfoot?
That's Gordon Lightfoot. I mean, Sue, which Lightfoot is it?
Well, they're both Canadian.
I wonder if it's...
Could it be Gordon?
Could be Gordon.
It's 2-2.
They're both Canadian, so of course they like each other.
You can cut the tension with a knife.
This is a tough game. This really
is. Unbelievable.
Intense.
This is brilliant.
All right, we're ready?
Came up with this?
This is Michael Heidemann. Michael Heidemann wrote this. So, by the way, it's the greatest thing Michael's ever done for the show.
It's not true.
Here we go. 2-2. Really, this is for the win. This Lightfoot's first public appearance was in the fourth grade and was broadcast over the school's public address system on a Parents' Day event. Yes, Nick.
Lori Lightfoot?
That's incorrect.
Oh, Nick.
Sue?
I guess that might be Gordon.
Gordon Lightfoot!
Way to go for it, Nick.
I got to tell you, Nick, I would have gone your way as well because I would have thought he's 80 years old. They didn't have a public address system. They just had scrolls they would run from class to class.
Yeah.
All right, we have nice consolation prizes for you. And if Sue approves, she and Gordon Lightfoot are going to swing by your house in Northwest Indiana.
Yeah, not a problem. Anytime. You're more than welcome, too, Steve.
Well, I feel for you, man, because I would have done the same thing. All right, hold the line.
How about Nick, all class, congratulating Sue and everything?
Yeah, but
that would be Lori Sue.
Right.
Not a confusing game at all. It was really easy to follow.
How about this? This Lightfoot was elected high school class president 3 times. Any of you guys?
I'm going Lori.
Lori.
I'm going
Lori.
Gordon.
It's actually Lori. Yeah,
come on.
Just for fun.
This Lightfoot, this Lightfoot's favorite artist is Bob Dylan.
Of course.
It's got to be Gordon.
Gordon.
That's Lori.
Lori.
No, it's Gordon.
Wait, which one liked the Bieber?
Gordon, the Canadian.
Gordon, okay.
Oh, this is a good one. This one's tough. This Lightfoot enjoyed a brief stint in a square dance ensemble.
Lori.
Yeah, this tough is Lori.
Gordon.
Yeah.
Gordon was in the square dance ensemble. Yeah.
They do square dancing in Canadian?
And they were calling the singing, swinging eights.
Oh, man.
Somebody texted earlier. It was a great text. The listener texted in and said, I was at a Gordon Lightfoot concert, and he came out to play, and the applause died down just enough for someone to yell, rock and roll! And he paused, and he went, wow, are you in the wrong room? So, again, congratulations, Lori Sue. You have the Gordon Lightfoot tickets. What we give to our friend Nick is a consolation prize. Anything in particular you'd like to give to him? How about a MyPillow? A MyPillow and an app gift card. MyPillow.com and ABT.com. Going to the city. Got you on my mind. Country show is pretty. Back on the Steve Cochran Show, number 1,399. And once again, unfortunately, Mike Madigan couldn't make it in. And tomorrow, busy. 1,399 in a row. And we're still waiting on J.B. Pritzker. Anna, what's happening with you? Is life good?
Life is good. You know, we're going to talk to John McDonough later. We got the Black Ops.
Yeah, you don't have to plug that show.
Oh, yeah. I thought that's the part of the show, your show, where we plug our show.
No, I'm just more concerned about you.
You don't care about that?
No, I care about the show. Certainly, I care about the show. I just wonder if everything's okay with you.
Everything's good. My husband and daughter are in Italy, taking my 85-year-old mother-in-law to her home village.
And leaving her?
Potenza. And she wants to stay, and she can stay. But she makes this special pizza, and they say this little village in Italy, they make that kind of pizza, and so she's going to eat. And
wow.
They're going to eat, and they're going to mange their way through Italy.
What a cool deal.
Yeah.
All right, very cool. All right, stick around, Bill and Wendy, in just a second in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We'll get back there in a second, too. Anna, have you met Bill and Wendy?
I have. I love Bill and Wendy.
Big fans of yours.
I'm big fans. I love
very,
it.
Very, very popular.
Yeah.
Bill and Wendy, do you know Marcia?
Yes. Hi, Marcia. Yes, we do.
Hi, Anna, Marcia. Bill and Wendy, do you know Mark?
Mark Carmen, yeah.
You still getting married?
Friends.
Yeah, what's going on with the marriage plans?
Everything's great, guys.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for asking. Good. I love that Wendy asks every day. She's
keeping tabs. She wants to make sure.
And has money on you not getting married.
I do not.
By the way, Anna,
I sort of believe Bill.
The say yes to the dress moment came up earlier, and Mark said, I'm not sure what to say, and I because she wanted to do a different dress, apparently. Do I have the story right so far?
Not really, no. But,
tell me the story.
Did you veto the dress?
Well, no, she said yes to the dress, and she was very excited. She put the dress, that she had said yes to it, not the dress itself, but put it out there, but then the next day she decided that wasn't the dress, so she...
Did you sneer at it or something, or any kind of body language that made her feel like awkward or uncomfortable in the dress?
I thought I did a great job saying, "Way to make a decision, good job." But then,
what every woman wants to hear.
Yeah,
hey,
we don't want that.
High five.
We want God. That's gorgeous.
Yes,
right?
You look so stunning in that dress.
This is what I told you to say. You would look beautiful in anything. I know this is a very hard decision. If I can help you in any way, I will. If you want me to stay out of it, I will. But I just want you to know I can't wait to see you on that day because I know how gorgeous you'll be.
I'll marry you.
That's a great script.
Right?
Take that script.
That was great.
I said that. I don't get to see the dress in this situation. You know, I've done great work.
You said what I said? Captain Romance?
Something close to that.
I may win my bet, Bill.
Yeah, you're going to win your bet.
Let me ask you a question. Did you look up from the game?
Did you put the remote down?
I mean, the NBA draft's tomorrow. There's a lot of prep going on.
Are you mad that there's no name or number on the back of the dress?
Exactly. How do you know there's not? That could be an add-on.
What a cool surprise for her if you have it done. And by the way, it'd be Carmen 1.
Maybe I could put that on my suit, little thing there, 23.
Right. And the 1 would indicate your first marriage.
Right, right.
Oh, got to keep your options open.
Right.
Or how many months it'll last.
Oh, gee.
Boy, you're all meaner than I am.
Only one mean person allowed.
What's coming up on the Bill and Wendy?
Jaco Marcellino.
Oh, is that right? Sha-na-na. Free concert tonight in Addison.
He's the na.
Which na? Middle
second
or last?
Second na.
Okay. Nah. He's the last na.
Yeah. Final na.
Yeah, the final na. Yeah. He's the last na. So that's coming up. And again, this afternoon, you got McDonough in studio with you guys?
We do. We do indeed. So that'll be fun.
So, and you're going to hold him down and tickle him until he tells you who the Hawks are going to draft.
We're going to try our best.
Because that McDonough loves to be tickled. I can tell you that
right
now.
You know it.
Thanks for playing our game. We'll see you tomorrow.